Thank you very much. We are about to start. I have been informed that the senior management of the department are a bit delayed to meet the minister. There is a bit of meeting. But I see the CFO coming in, which I think probably they have tried to divide themselves, which is very good. We are going to start. Today we're doing the presentations of the four entities. We did the developmental one on Tuesday. We did the four yesterday. We're doing the last four today. So the last leg, we can't wait. The honorable members are a bit exhausted. But don't get deceived by that. And think that there will be no questions to ask. But they are a bit exhausted. So we're going to start with the HTA. I think they are ready. Welcome all the officials that are here. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. And sometimes we are all here, we say, hey, this committee is big, eh? The honorable members are more than 20. But it's always nice to have you here. So we're going to start better now with the HTA presentation. The process is simple. Each entity presents. When they finish, we ask questions of clarity. And then, once we have accepted the questions, we move to the second, to the next entity. Housing Development Agency, over to you. You will introduce your delegation and then start with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And good morning to everybody in the room, especially the committee members. Introducing the delegation, I need to remind you of your concern about the IEXCA the last time you presented. You were concerned about composition and the evidence.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
sir. You sure? Okay. This room is a bit big, so I want to make sure that the voice carries through.
You were concerned about the organizational capacity of the EXCO from an effectiveness point of view and a composition point of view, and I said to you then, because we were already in the process of our restructuring, that you would be, pleased and surprised the next time you presented, which in fact is this occasion. So starting from my right, because I will be indicating the changes that have occurred in the course of the last time we presented and our changes in our organizational development. So starting extremely on my right is Ed Crofton, who is now manager of national programs, which would include NUST mining towns, athletic projects and development. Next to her is Rashida Issel, who is in charge of corporate services. Next to her is Rosanna Muller, who is our CFO. Next to Rosanna is Lucien Ravale, who is a new appointment to our executive and is responsible for one of our regions, or for some of the regions now. Our general manager is in charge of a region. And next to him is Oscar Cosa, who is also now a regional manager. So that's a big change, that we decentralize and we now have general management responsible for regions. And I'm happy at that to see the organization. We'll be joined by our IGR person, who's unfortunately been delayed by flights and traffic, who will stay throughout the session to keep up with what's happening in the rest of the session that I'll present. And it will be level. So, on to the presentation. And we have distributed, obviously, we have a look at our plan, which is both the five-year plan and annual performance plan, and I'm just dealing with the highlights. The first slide really talks about who we are and what our major functions are. Those haven't changed. Our major role is to identify, acquire, develop and release lands, and then to support provincial and local authorities, as well as the national departments with project management and housing development services. And we work with provinces and municipalities around those services that are noted at the bottom. bottom land identification, Ascendian planning, project pipeline development, project management, informal settlement upgrade, iDrop support, and geospatial information. Those are the general areas in which we've been involved. It's the mandated activities and the work that we do nationally and provincially and locally. Over the previous five-year period, the previous term of office, essentially you've seen an organization that has grown substantially, in fact quite massively. From a geographic point of view, we started off in 2009 with the head office and two members of staff and two project officers in the Eastern and Western Capes. We now have regional offices in Limpopo, the Free State, Northern Cape and KZN. We are in the process of negotiating with Mpumalanga in the Northwest. Our staffing has gone from one, Ms. Mula was the first, in PhD in March 2009. We now have 112 staff members across the country, and our establishment is at 182 in the plan that you have before you. Our activities are also substantially expanded. The original mandate was there, and we had the mandate. We continued to have activities underneath that, and we had the two big projects, the M2 and Zanabula, which we'll talk about in a minute. And we've grown those, and we now have agreements with provinces. We call them medium-term operational plans, MTOPs, and they support the national priority projects. So we're now involved in a range of national priority projects, mining towns, catalyst projects, and we are looking forward to taking forward the whole idea of being a developer of land. We've also grown our income. We started off with a grant of 63 million. We now are at 186 million as well, and that doesn't include the amount of the funding that we manage on behalf of our provinces and local authorities. So, for example, in the N2, we could be managing have over the years managed up to a million rand. In Zanabula, we manage easily 200 million rand a year. So the income, both from a revenue and a spread point of view, a diversity point of view, has grown. And from an organizational stability point of view, and one often overlooks that, the glue that keeps an organization together is often overlooked to the detriment of those organizations. But we've established good financial and operational procedures. We're in the process of consolidating that moment, and it has resulted in a clean audit for every year of our operation. So that's the expansion of the organization over time. Just in terms of our achievements, because what I'm trying to do is paint the picture and telling you where we're going from here, the folks at the inception were established at the agency of management of those two projects. We moved from delivery from head office to a strong presence in the regions in the MTOS. So that's perhaps been one of the biggest changes that has occurred, is the fact that we have seen the demand move into the provinces and local authorities, and we needed to establish and grow our management capacity and organizational structure to deal with that, and I'll cover that a little bit later as well. And so we moved from the offices in the West and East Cape to regional offices in those three provinces. And the primary focus is, of course, land assembly, and we have exceeded in every year the target that we've been set there. In fact, we're looking set to do that this year already. The Master Spatial Plan was an important new direction from the Minister. When she came into office, we were able to very quickly put that together, and it is now becoming the framework document around which spending should be taking place. And we have two GIS information systems which are increasingly being used in provinces and even in other departments. Public Works is using it. A number of other departments at local and national level are using it, and they're essentially tools that allow us to identify what land is being identified, where that land is, what the status of the legal status, the technical status of that land is. We have support, for example, the EAB in their deep searches. So it's becoming a very useful tool for the sector as a whole. We've met all of our targets, and we've exceeded them, particularly in land acquisition. And we accumulated extensive knowledge of project and pipeline development. mega project management, in a few big projects, any informal has been upgraded. What I'm hoping with your permission to show you is a little 5-minute movie at the end of this, which will tell you where we are with the informal settlements. So the foundation has been laid to support human settlement development and to fulfill the targets that we now have for the next term of office. Just a quick comparison, because people often see the N2 as a problem child. So what we did, we went and looked at, this slide wasn't in your original presentation I put in this morning. What we did was to compare it with what are now the kind of flavors of the month, in particular Cornelia, Cosmo City. So if you look at the start date slide at the top, you'll see when those projects started. So the N2 started in February 2005, so Angula, which is the Nelson Mandela project, started in October 2007. Cosmo City, which is a big comparison, started in January 2005, and Cornelia only started in July 2010. The projected yield for those projects is 16,000 for the N2, 13,000 for Nanambula. Cornelia is 15,000, and Cosmo, which again is favor of the month, was only projected at 12,000. Of the units completed to date, the N2 done 11,986, compared to Cosmo's 8,241. So just want to put that in context and make the other point, which is very important, which is that Cosmo is a greenfield settlement. The N2 is an informal settlement upgrade. And the difference in terms of the management that is required, the skill that is required, particularly at the community management level, is massive in terms of the comparison between developing a greenfield site and developing a new settlement, working with the existing established community. So for all its problems, and there have been many, for all the difficulties that we've had with the N2, I think that the National Department and the sector as a whole can just look at the actual figures, separate fact from fiction, and indicate the fact that it's been a major project which has always succeeded. So I just wanted to put that in, perhaps a little bit of an advert, Madam Chair. So that was the HDA. At the end of the last term of office, and then the minister came to office, and she indicated in a various budget speech, policy speeches, that these would be the things that she would be expecting us to assist her with, and we have moved our plans in accordance with that. Firstly, she talked about the revitalization of mining sites. Secondly, the 50 mega projects or category projects, so they're often called. Making the N2 a focus of activity again for the National Department. Setting up a credible housing database covering both land and housing needs. Structuring the HDA in such a way that it can become developer to not only acquire and prepare land, but to facilitate the development of project management of green projects. And then for creating a strategic or master spatial plan. So those are the things that came out of the minister's pronouncements. And then the medium-term expenditure framework, strategic framework, was established. And essentially it came down to these 3 points as the major focuses of the mandate, and that's where we're at the moment, which is the acquisition of 10,000 hectares, the provision of, in the framework of provision of 1.5 million housing opportunities, and the implementation of the 50 catalytic program. So those are the major mandates that we have to now develop. And so the point becomes, how do we then do that? And that's what our strategic plan, which is a document that is before you for your consideration, has been established. So the first thing we did was to relook at the way in which we structured and organized. And ultimately we came down to 3 programs. Partly the development program is in accordance with National Treasury regulations and the way in which these programs are set up and reported on at a national level. But program one is administration, which include, and you'll see in the next slide, it starts to become 1A, 1B, 2A to B, but includes finance as program 1A and corporate services as program 1B. And there's a general manager in charge of each of those. We've had that since we started, nothing new there. Program 2 and Program 3 have been split to more clearly focus what they do and also to give greater emphasis to regional management, because that's where the work is. Or rather, there are 2 now very clear activities, if you like, The one is a regional focus, and the second on a national program that the minister has asked us to support. So what we've done is program two is now planning and information, and it too has two elements to it. The first is policy research, monitoring, and information, which also now has a general manager. And our general manager for that is not present. He had to be in Northern Cape, and the flights from Northern Cape back to Cape Town go via Johannesburg, he wasn't able to do it. And then we've got national program support, which is in Scotland's area, and that's where all the national programs, NUS, Catalytic Project, Mining Towns, Development, sit. And then program three focuses almost entirely, in fact, entirely on what's happening in the region. So we have two regions there for the moment. We anticipate and have provided for three regions. As soon as we sign the remaining provinces up, we will have three regions, a few regional managers, and region one, we've covered those provinces. Region two, we've covered the provinces that are noted there, and they each now have a general manager. And that's what gives us our expert now. It's basically the general managers in charge of all of those programs. So it's a growth of the capacity. It's an increase in the national management structure. It has allowed for major movements within the organization at both the senior, and obviously that has ricocheted on. And I'm very proud to say that we were able to fill all of those senior management positions from internally within the organization. So that's the revised regional function. In terms of what they do, and I've already talked a little bit to this, you'll see that, again, we now have the programs as 1A, 1B, 2B, 2A, 2E, etc. And essentially they are, in terms of their goals and their objectives at a strategic level, some of the points that I've already made. So I'm not going to spend too much time on that. I would draw your attention to program two there, where essentially the focus is on the release of land for human settlement development, strategic support for national priority projects, and then program three, which is essentially about provinces and municipalities and the work that we do there. If you were to look in some detail at pages 27 to 31 of the plans that we, of the document that we sent you, you would see the detailed plans at a provincial and program level. What I've done here is to just focus on the major plans, the macro indicators, which is what we will be reporting on at your level, although they are supported by fairly detailed plans which are already in the pipeline, and we then move down to a business unit and sub-business unit development where we're starting to look at exactly what each unit is supposed to be doing from a program and an accountability point of view. So the first, and these indicators come directly out of the mandate that we've been given. The mandate has been signed by the minister, so they talk directly to that. The first macro indicator about the master spatial plan, and essentially there we're going to develop the plan. That's well advanced. It's in its final consultative stages with the provincial MCs. It is hoped to come back to a MINMEC in the very near future. Can I just indicate that the person that's come in is from our team, from our IGR team, but that's a welcome. We did notice that he was delayed by SAA. So the master spatial plan, it's targeted to complete it in the course of this coming financial year. We're well on the way to doing that. In terms of hectares, which is a really fundamental, well-located land released, that's the important issue. Not merely identified, it actually released for development. The target for 2015 and 16 is 3,000 hectares. That links into the 10,000 hectares that we've been allocated for the 5-year plan. I actually don't want to tell you where we are at this point because you're then going to increase the target that we have. In terms of the national priority programs, in particular mining towns, community projects, and us, again, those are long-term projects. I believe that we're doing quite well. I think you have had some sight of that, Madam Chair. The mining towns one in particular seems to be gathering momentum. I think as a result of the intervention of the national department, which we can support. So essentially there to develop those plans and programs and support in particular mining towns, settlement groups, and us, and there are a whole range of business plans underneath that. And then to work to support all nine provinces. We're already working in those nine provinces. We don't have agreements with Mpumalanga and the Northwest at this point in time, but we either have or very close in it. And we're and in fact we now do have the campaign. We recently signed the campaign. So again, that the governmental relationship process has been established. We now need to populate it with a operational plan. And at this point, I'm going to stop and ask our CFO to give you an overview of the finances.
Thank you, Chair. Madam Chair, overall, our finances, we project that we will be, for the year 2014-15, we are on target to spend most of our money that we have allocated, which is 222 million. And most all the money given by the department will be spent. There's just some concerns that there aren't enough because the objectives were as late. That is not all going to be spent, but the commitments are made, so there will be rollovers and it will soon be finalized. As far as our project management fee, that's for the two Section 29 project. Everything's on target to be spent, as well as some of the provincial transfers. The only province that we haven't really received any transfers from has been Limpopo. As you know, there have been some challenges there. Sorry, Madam Kate. There have been some challenges there, and as soon as we sign an agreement with them, we will be receiving money and allocating it to the key performance areas. On the expenditure side, there's nothing really to report. Expenditure has been on target. Salaries, there is going to be a small saving, which we allocated to operations. In areas that we prioritize need to update such as infrastructure and setting up of offices. I think that's all to unless there are any questions.
Can I just make the mention which we have made every year, which is that we don't have capital funds for the acquisition of land. And that's the problem because it's our manner, and we've not been able to overcome and solve that problem in 6 years of operation. So it remains a concern, obviously, for the agency and for the sector. So, Chair, that's the presentation. If the technology allows, if I could try and show you a quick video. Yeah.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, that's our presentation. We're happy to take questions.
Thank you very much from the Council Development Agency team. That's the presentation. Questions of clarity? And comments?
The presentation. But my question is that the allocation of this catalytic, city catalytic project, six million people, where are they allocated? Because it can help us. And the other one, the question is that they have 112 staff, but their projection is 182. What I want to find out in 3 years' time. But there is no way that they can trust in the trust because it means that most of the projects need some priority. So if you don't have staff, how are we going to implement this project? And the other one, Chairperson, is the one of the target is 10,000 hectares. Currently, how many do they have? Well, that is great, but currently, how many do they have? And what I want to find out, the last one, Chairperson, is the one, they have the project of Central Gateway and Zanen Vula project. How far was those projects? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Melin.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to join the Honorable Member to appreciating the good work by the SDA. It is good. Maybe that is your good work of achieving your target. Indeed, we need more land for more development. Can we send the target in your own opinion? The more you add more staff, you must also see more targets. There are some concerns in other angles that the land that you settle in other areas, the value sometimes a little bit not that would work. So can you comment on that? And it was a serious allegation that the value tend to be a little bit small. And the last question, we always want to ensure more land nearer working areas. We also want to integrate communities. We are from a past that put other people's farm work. Now we want to change that. To change that, we need more land nearer these areas that were set for a particular people. So how far are you pushing for that?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm not sure if this is very good. I have to make it. Thanks. Just the first one is on the presentation. I'm not sure if it's a typo. Under the medium-term strategic framework, you are talking about acquiring 10,000 hectares of well-located publicly owned land. I thought you are acquiring all kind of land, not only the publicly owned land, but then this statement can be interpreted to mean that you are looking at like the land that is in maybe the other departments and state-owned entities. It was that the intention, but the first question. And then secondly, and I'm glad that you showed the video around informal settlement advocate, because that's where I want to locate my question. Is that if you look at where the informal settlement allocated, it is an area that we call much closer to economic activities. I want to check
how much land do you purchase, where the settlements are currently at. So there's no like you're purchasing the land somewhere and then you want to move people from where they are. Because some of the land that the informal settlements are, it's privately owned land. And I think if we are to move with seats with regard to informal settlements, we need to prioritize purchasing the land where the informal settlements are. Because in many instances where the informal settlements are, as I said, it's much closer to the economic activity, and that's why we have the informal settlements. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Honorable in for the alignment of the strategic plan and take into consideration with the outcome page of the MGP and of course the project budget. You think that say you know, 300 hectares for 2015, 2016, and 2016, 2017 is in line with what we want to realize and the outcome of the NGP, the objectives of the NGP. The second one is last year we raised an issue of the, we call them SOEs, that are do not release land or donate land for development to for human settlements to public entities or public spheres of government, especially the local government. And I just want to find out whether have you started, since we spoke about it, to engage SOEs in relation to the donation of that. Because most of that land, as you indicated up here, are settled land. It's a settled that has an informal settlement. There is no value for them in any case. If the Department of Human Settlements within the province or the municipality or the metro wouldn't develop that land, there would be no value for the private sector, because in most cases they have faith to evict those people or relocate them. So it's the sphere of government, they have to intervene. And then when the sphere of government intervenes in their favor, they then charge the market value to the measures. So for that is a big issue for me, and I would like to know whether have you started engagement in that. The other one is that almost 50 catalytic projects, do we have a pipeline? A pipeline that talks to that 50, and the pipeline that has been that has a contribution from the province. I know it should come from the provinces, but have you finalized the pipeline for it? And the spread of the throughout the nine provinces, I think.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kat.
Thank you, Justin, and thank you for the presentation. Few comments from my side and some of them questions. With the acquisition of land, how do we ensure that integration of human settlement is taking place, and where has that been successful? And any challenges, because I believe that it's not only about, you know, giving houses to people or help them, but I think we have to make sure that the integration is there to make sure everything is in the same area. The scope is very wide. In fact, I think you are expanding, and I want to leave with Babush Tole and Push Tole to say I'm also concerned about your capacity, especially, I mean, with the expansion. That is, now you have more focus areas than you had before, and have a sense of staff for the entire country and for the provinces. I think, in my view, it's not enough. And also, while you assisting the municipalities and also the national department, I think I would like to see in your presentation to say how has it helped the communities economically. Like, for instance, with your intervention, you've assisted this municipality with this project, and so many jobs have been created. And the last one, you also mentioned as your challenge that you don't have capital funds for the acquisition of land. Remember, perhaps I don't know whether that will be your mandate, because imagine you are assisting the municipality. But now, if you want to have capital funds sent to you, then I will see perhaps you taking the responsibility of the municipality and the provinces. So why do you want the capital funds to be directly to you? Thank you.
Thank you very much, and other members. Maybe before HDA responds, it will be also very important to have an understanding of the relationship between the other departments in terms of this land acquisition, your public works and land affairs, as we can see if they have improved relationships. And the SOE, which sometimes most of them are holding a lot of land, how is the relationship between yourselves and them? And yes, I really want to align myself with both Honorable Chole and Honorable Pata in relation to, not necessarily to numbers in terms of staff, but also in terms of the capacity. Because your mandate is extending every day. Now, you have to assist in the 50 quality projects. You have to make sure that the department meets the 1.5 million houses that the president is going to do beyond the acquisition of land that was your initial mandate. And the capacity, therefore, of the HDA, how is it improving? Of course, when we talk about it, we talk about that as well, because we also know that sometimes you are sent to provinces to help with certain projects to make sure that they are off the ground. How is your capacity? Are you overstretched? Are you able to do this? I'm not going to labor the facts of the capital fund that you talked about in relation to land acquisition. Maybe you will respond to that as we give you that. But that may be important, because for me, the important here is to understand that when we live here, you can do the work that you are supposed to do. We don't want down the line to come back to us and say, remember when you came here, we told you that we've got only one class staff, and now we can't do certain things. And you were here, and we didn't ask you this question. So that's why, because very soon you have to move faster than you are in terms of doing what you're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and also to the members for the various questions. And I think if we can group them, and I'm anticipating that each of my co-members, which is how we deal with capacity problem, we don't rely on the CEO to deal with issues, if each of my executive team can answer. So if we look at them, and I want to fit in this order because I think it's the flow, the whole question of land is obviously a very important issue. And I'm going to ask Lucien to deal with all of the issues that came up there. Then we look at project management and project development. And it occurs in the context of the national capability programs, which I'm going to ask Adair to respond to. And then some of the regional programs, and in particular into which Oscar and Lucien can deal with. And then finally, the issue of staffing and capacity. And I'm going to ask Rashida deal with that, although the other general managers might want to comment on that as they deal with how they're going to operate in their areas. Sort of can come in on a capital funding question. So, we can ask you as well.
All right, thank you. Good morning, Honorable Member Chairperson. I think the first question around Member Tolle around the extent of land that has been acquired today by the agency. It's way over 10,000 hectares, and that cuts across state and also private land. And I think it covers all the provinces, ranging from the Western Cape, housing, depending on whether it's state land or private land. But we attach the entire country in terms of land acquisition or land release. Honorable Nene, the value of land, yes, that is a challenge, but ordinarily how we work is we would appoint at least minimum two independent valuers to assist us with the determination of fair compensation of land. But it does happen that from time to time we find that land, I think, is valued more, and we are also able to even seek or
yet exists a third opinion or even a fourth opinion in instances where we are not able to agree with landowners on the purchase price or what constitutes a compensation. But in terms of the HDA Act, we are also able to expropriate land. We are also able to facilitate expropriation using the National Housing Action Directive by the municipalities as well. The issue of location of land acquired, in the main, we are actually responding to historical challenges in the sense that there are areas where human settlements have continued to build houses where land ownership matters were not resolved, and that would in the main be in the rural area. So in under such circumstances, we are able to speak to state departments or custodian departments to release land so that township extraction processes can then be finalized, and from there then end-user beneficiaries or beneficial occupiers of specific land can then get title deeds of their properties. But in the main new land that we are acquiring, we are mindful of the need to make inroads into the state economy through special restructuring imperatives. So if you look at land that we are definitely acquiring, most of it is actually well-located land, and we think that we are making significant progress in that respect. Honorable Ghana, in terms of our approach to land that settles upon, our approach to informal settlement upgrading is that relocation should be the last resort. So therefore, in instances where informal settlement is earmarked or targeted for upgrading and the land on which it is settled on is privately owned, our first step is to try and secure that land. We have many examples of that, but there are challenges obviously that we are experiencing here and there, especially in instances where land is owned by government but administered by traditional authorities. It's a particular challenge, a clear challenge in the Asumbek area where land is administered by your royal Bafokeng, and the challenge that we are working on it. But our approach is that where informal settlements located on privately owned land, our approach is we buy that land and upgrade the informal settlements. Where an informal settlement is located on state land, we approach the custodian department and ensure that we secure the property. SOE land. Honorable Chairperson, you would remember that our minister, in fact the previous minister, concluded delivery agreements with the ministers of the Public Works, National Rural Development and Land Reform, and also the minister responsible for public enterprise, so speed on the enterprise. Now, we have a fairly good relationship with most of the state owned enterprises, notably Transnet, which owns lots of land that is public land settlement. You have your partners or enterprise and them, and then you have the NELS, FAP also owns land ranging. So we have a very good relationship with specifically Transnet, which is the biggest landowner by far in terms of numbers and also extent. Now, the challenge still, Madam Chair, is the fact that they want compensation. The argument is that these are assets that are on their balance sheet, and therefore they cannot donate them for human settlement. Even in instances where the hostel typically toxic asset that's very much densely populated. In Mamelodi, some of you know Pumulong informal settlement is located on land owned by Transnet. We have recently at least got approval from Transnet to release those properties to the Fiosana. But at the fee, we are not getting those properties for free. And continuously, we are acquiring properties from Transnet. Recently, again, we bought one property in Buffalo City Municipality, DCM, as part of the Duncan Village Development, for development by DCM and the Eastern Cape Province. In the city of Joburg, in a city, we bought also buildings from Transnet, which will be developed by the Johannesburg Social Housing Company for rental housing development. So we have fairly a good relationship with Transnet, but the challenge again is that it indicated that we don't have a capital budget. So in instances where land is available by Transnet, we must still run to the provinces and then fund the actual acquisition with provincial funding, and that has not always yielded the required result or the desired result. How we work specifically with Transnet is from time to time they will release what is called a periodic list of non-core assets, and what we do is human settlements will then be afforded an opportunity to harvest what is useful for human settlements. From there then we can then take the process forward in terms of securing the required properties. Integration, most of the properties, especially privately owned properties that we have had, lots of them in Mangaung, Soso Bank, Benavila, Limpopo, Lepanales, and all the other areas, we make sure that in the design of the township layout plans, we make sure that we provide for intercession. In other ways, we can ensure that we accommodate mixed-income households. We can ensure that all housing programs are accommodated. So as to try and do away with the development of just three or a row of RDP houses. The relationship between HDA and custodian departments, if I may specifically zoom into that, Honorable Chair, as I indicated, we have currently have our minister has delivered agreements with state custodian departments for public works and rural development. But I must say we have been successful in getting a lot of state land from rural development and land reform, but not so much from public works. We are still battling, I must say, and unfortunately, public works, in fact, is the custodian of, in the main, I mean, you know that public works ordinarily would own properties that are located in your former provincial administration, state, provincial administration, free state, Transvaal. So ordinarily, that would be properties that are located in your towns like DCM, Buffalo City, Polokwane, Nelspruit, you name them. And those are typically the properties that we require specifically for human settlement development. And there are specific ones that we've targeted that are owned by public works. We so much want them, but there are challenges in terms of, you know, the release processes within the Department of National Public Works. We've taken the process forward to say, yes, public works, we are battling, but let's look at the provinces as well, because provinces also own well-located properties that are held provincially. There, I think we are making inroads. But in the main, there has been significant progress in terms of securing land that we require for human settlements that's owned by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. This is mainly for new housing, but not only new housing, but also to attend to issues of tenure upgrading. Tenure upgrading simply means where there's people already on the land, but these people don't necessarily have tenure or title deed to their properties. So by securing these properties, at the end of the day, we ensure that the township establishment processes are completed and therefore the beneficiaries can get title. Thank you.
Thank you. On the Catalytics Project program, firstly to note that the Catalytics Project program will demonstrate the elements of the master spatial plan. So it looks at projects that are going to demonstrate integration and impact at the end of the day, and those are the assessment criteria that's being used for the selection of these projects. It's also going to be demonstrating your spatial targeting components. Hence, the projects and where they will be spread and located, whilst it will be in all provinces, it will be aligned and focused to where the master spatial plan is requiring the spatial targeting and the spatial focus. So that is the background. Where are we? All 9 provinces have submitted projects as well as municipalities. We have a pipeline of some 160 projects. We have a pipeline of 160 projects. We, together with the National Department, went back to the provinces and municipalities because we found the projects submitted by the provinces and the municipalities didn't overlap. They were different. So we asked the provinces and municipalities, and notably the metros, to have a conversation and prioritize together and resubmit. So the provinces have resubmitted projects to the department for assessment, and that including submissions and the conversation they held with Metro. So 160 has reduced. We've got 5 or 6 projects submitted per province, and we are going into an assessment process of those projects. Apart from getting the government projects submitted, and I will note the projects is about integration and impact, it is also about mobilizing private sector. So these are not mega RDP projects. These are integrated mixed developments, and we will assess them on those bases. But apart from what the provinces have submitted now together with the metros, we have submissions from the private sector existing. There is also a pipeline. Only in the Western Cape and Northern Cape did not get submission. So we've gone back and we'll be mobilizing a bit more broadly to make sure the private sector, and this is not only private developers, you want to target developers, investors, financiers, banks that potentially have these catalytic projects. You want to pull them in as well. So there will be a call to the private sector to submit, apart from the projects that have been submitted already, and they'll be going through the same assessment process as we're doing with the government projects.
apart from that, we can't ignore there are existing national priority mega projects like Into Gateway Zanambula. They will continue into the program, and the mine towns have also been prioritized into the program. So there is quite a substantial pipeline, and we are working through, and we are currently at the assessment and recommending phase of the project, which we should hopefully complete quite soon in this month.
In terms of capacity for mining towns for NUS and for the catalytic projects, we have at the core head of this team of the HCA. They are supported and will be doing, the region will be doing implementation support, so you'll be seeing the capacity in the region. As we are assigned projects, because there's two roles. Nationally, the HCA will assist with project program management to the department, and then where we assign specific projects, we will create a capacity team located in a region and bring on the necessary capacity in the regional level to deal on a project-by-project basis. Obviously, HCA won't be managing private sector projects. Private sector will be managing it. But we will oversee from the head office and together with the region those projects. So that capacity is in place for the program management. And as we get projects on stream, we will bring on more capacity in the regions for that purpose. And over and above that, there are also certain technical oversight teams that we're mobilizing to go and inspect in the region and make sure we can accurately and regularly report and oversee and intervene if necessary to make sure these projects do keep performing. So at the moment, we have the capacity in the head office. We'll bring on in the region as required. We have had an additional funding allocation for these purposes, and you will be seeing that mobilization of both in-house capacity and outsourced capacity or contract capacity coming on board as we require it and as projects are required.
So ask now, but two regional managers responsible for projects that perhaps also can handle that operation with these and say how you can do that. Madam Chair, honourable members, good morning. Madam Chair, I believe this is what's meant by the coordinated speech in parliamentary. I will address specifically the issues to do with projects, but to start with the fact that we just need to the issue of capacity. To say that it's like the chicken and egg situation, and that the HCA had to be cautious about just amazing capacity without the need to apply the specific projects, which is in line with the efficient resource management committee's position. So looking at specific projects, which are the N2 Gateway and then the Zanambula, we have had a number of years involved in these projects, which have built sufficient understanding of how this projects work. If I make a specific example of the video that was shown earlier, that the experience in the capacity that those projects, for example, 70% to do with engagement with communities and the technical aspects account for just 30%. In terms of the linkage then to the land, we feel as the HCA be able to leverage then our relationship with the other public entities in line with those specific projects and their needs. Because typically for the big projects, they span over 5 to 10 years, and households grow with time, and find that the numbers then in terms of delivery have to grow in line with the growth of households. So we have a relationship that we have with the other state entities to look if we can acquire more land to satisfy the needs of the regional. If I could maybe on the two projects just to say where we are at this point. On the N2, we are at 75% of the project targets, which amount to over 16,000 units. And in Zanambula, we are at 56%. In all of these projects, we do track on a regular basis, not just only the houses produced or the sites delivered, but also the job opportunities. Thank you.
Are you, I done?
You've got two more answers to make, Madam Chair. The one was on capacity, and then on finances.
Capacity. The HDA currently have on its establishment and then 12 staff members. We're planning, because of the amount of work and what we are about to do with the catalyst projects and the mining towns, etc., we're planning to have an establishment of 185 staff members. We've got a recruitment plan, which is an internal recruitment plan, and we are trying to start, we are actually starting to recruit internally and then growing externally. In the meantime, we use our, for the capacity, we use tools and policies such as the secondment and acting policy to ensure that we don't have gaps. We also have the chains where we get specialized chains in and to allow us to assist us. And Odette also spoke about outsourcing service providers and to service providers to help us with our capacity. We are trying to keep our staff lean and mean and not excess staff members. So yes, we are going to go to 185 staff members.
And asking Madam Chair, and then if I can just sum up that for capital fund.
Madam Chair, on the capital fund, as you know, we've not been able to get any capital funds. We've tried looking at various mechanisms to get money that we could use. So at the moment, the model works in the following way. We acquire mostly publicly owned land because most of that we do not have to pay for. We've had a bit of profit because, you know, as you knew, we didn't spend all our money. So where we had savings, we bought the first two buildings we bought with that money. We've actually now sold them to Joshua and we got a bit of capital profit. So that money has been put in to assist the precinct with some land. And that's about the extent of what we can do.
Thanks, Madam Chair, members. If I can just conclude by indicating, as a result of the discussion, some areas where perhaps the hierarchy is, because they're probably areas where we would hope and look to your assistance. The question of location was a very important question. The Master Spatial Planning Framework is the framework which is trying to gather where provinces and local authorities acquire land. And if we're going to succeed in this relocation overcoming apartheid spatial planning, it is really important that those principles be the principles which guide the acquisition of land and the development of projects. And to the extent that you play an oversight role, I think it would be very helpful to the process if you were aware of, and we had you come back and do whatever presentation you like on the master spatial plan and the catalytic projects, but just to reinforce that message, because a lot of the work is done at provincial and local level, and often we have to deal with acquisitions which aren't fitting within those principles. The second very important area is around the area of compensation. And the question of where do we get land out of the public sector comes. Because the public sector has got a lot of land, and in particular public works and public enterprises. And the problem we have there is this question of compensation. Because as was mentioned in our presentations, at the moment, those, especially state-owned enterprises, argue that it's just on their balance sheets, and they can't give that money, give that land away, even if it's another state department or a local authority, whatever it is, for free. They have to realize what they see as market value. That's coming up in the form of it's currently under discussion. Public enterprises getting the lead there, but it will probably go to cabinet in the not too distant future. And again, the role of the committee will be vital in trying to get the human settlements' view on whether very valuable land should be passed between state-owned or state enterprises and state departments at a profit. The last point I want to make, Madam Chair, that the issue of capacity has been raised, and of course it's a very important one, because we can have all the plans in the world, and unless we can execute them with the right people, it becomes a problem. All the elements we've been talking about rely on orderly development, if you like, planned development. We know that that doesn't, in fact, it's not even necessarily the major way in which we operate. We're often dealing in an environment where we're having to react very quickly. And we're going to develop internally a process which allows us to have some funding available and some capacity, even if it is outsourced capacity, so to get a database of service providers who we can very quickly activate, so that if there is an eviction, if there is an easy plan, we can quickly do that in a manner that we haven't done as quickly as in the past. So responding to the kind of chaotic environment which we run, we're trying to do that. So that's the conclusion. So thanks very much for the questions and the comments, for the present, for listening to our president.
Thank you very much, Social Development Agency, for that presentation and responses. As we move to the second presentation, which will be the EAP, grab some to speak, as they are presented. It's going to be a working place, but unfortunately, also it will be here. So that takes something quietly, and we are ready with preparation to continue. If you can just take what you want and sit down, we can start with the presentation, even if the officials are standing. As long as one of us members are sitting down, we will start.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Unfortunately, our CEO is out of the country at the moment, so we'll be presenting on behalf of him. My name is Nikita Sigaba. I'm Head of Strategy in the executive committee, and we have the head of finance with us, Aubrey Mogwena, and also the business operation executive, Anton Parent. Okay.
I just before you continue, Ms. Wambo, it looks like this house was 50% owned by SDA. They like to occupy it even when they are in the house.
I'll be dealing with just the non-financial aspects of the strategic plan, and Aubrey will deal with the financial, and we have Anton to assist us obviously with any other questions that members of LCM might have later. We're just going to cover this, basically the strategic plan from 2014 to 2019, and obviously incorporated within the bank performance plan. Just to start off with the strategic overview, in terms of the vision, our vision is to be the trusted world-class regulator, and our mission is just to ensure that there's integrity of transactions between the state agents and the property consumer, and we do that by regulating and protecting and guiding the conduct of real estate agents profession in South Africa. And all that is basically born from the State Agency Affairs Act, where we have our primary mandate, which says that we need to regulate, maintain and promote standard of conduct of a state agent having to regard to public interest. We need to issue prohibited conduct certificates to qualify applicants, prescribe the standard education and training of the state agents, and where complaints are received, we need to institute disciplinary procedures against affiliating of state agents. Also included as part of the mandate is the fact that we need to manage and control the Fidelity Fund, which is used to protect property consumers. Our secondary mandate is that we also have a supervisory study from the Financial Intelligence Data Act. And so we are obliged to take any necessary steps in the state agency sector in terms of money laundering and terrorist financing. Although we do recognize that as part of MTSF, the EAB is responsible for the following. Intensify home ownership investment programs for affordable housing market, establishing transactional support for affordable housing market, monitoring and reporting transactions in the secondary housing subsidy market, collect analysis and disseminate information on property trends and value in the affordable housing market, develop policy and administration system that support individual transaction in affordable secondary housing markets, and also the issue of title deeds, and this includes 3994 and post 94 backlog. So we do include this as part of our strategic plan going forward. In terms of transformation initiative, we've got now one land and one estate agents program, where we're placing learners who are unemployed and are matriculants or graduates, and we're placing them with current practicing state agents. Our target is obviously to have 10,000 state agents from previously disadvantaged backgrounds to be placed and trained by state agents to also be a state agent. Just in terms of performance environment, our whole the state agents growth, which affects obviously our growth revenue, is very much linked to the economic growth. So we envisage that in 5 years' time, the state agents sector is going to grow as according to the economic growth. We also recognize that from a political perspective that we are part of the DHS objectives of also building 1.5 million houses, and that we will be more involved in the title deeds process in that process. This is our current structure, which we have planned for the next 5 years. We've obviously added the title deeds as a section as part of our organizational structure. We now employ the business operation executive, who is going to be also assisting us with opening up regional offices in the future. And also, we have a transformation manager who's not only going to deal with the current transformation initiative, but also the future initiatives that we might put in place. The products and services that we have is, in terms of Fidelity Fund, it's just a claim processing process. We process claims from property consumers that have been defrauded by estate agents. Interest earned by estate agents' trust account, there's agreement that 50% of that interest will actually come into the Fidelity Fund. And then compliance-related services, as we issue Fidelity Fund certificates, we institute disciplinaries, we deal with client complaints, and also mandatory audit reports under the Act, and also we perform inspections and investigations. Education and training, we do quality assurance on education or service providers in terms of education and training. We issue out estate agent certificates, study material for exams, and we also now have implemented a process of continuous professional development where qualified estate agents are expected to keep up to date with the changes in the industry and also the profession. And then other general services, we look at consumer awareness and we do some publications on raising issues that have changed in the industry. Now just moving on to the actual programs that are in place. And looking from a strategic objective point of view, the first one is compliance program, where we look into addressing complaints that have been received from property consumers, and then inspections in terms of the EA Act and ICA, and also the issuing of Fidelity Fund certificates to new and current registered estate agents. And in terms of the strategic objectives, we are saying that first in terms of enforcement that we should be achieving 90% of the complaints received within a 6 month period. Those complaints will be completed within a 6 month period. Inspections, we're looking to inspect 50% of the practicing estate agents within a 5 year rolling period. That's obviously assuming that we have currently that we have 12,000 estate agencies. New registrations, our target is that within the next 5 years we'll be able to issue certificates for new registrations within 21 days. Renewals, our target is to issue 100% of the FOCs within 5 days. And then within compliance, we just looked at the resources that are required, and we just noticed that most of our resources are within the disciplinary enforcement because we have qualified lawyers who actually need to perform that process. Then from a risk element, we still have a legal training, legal training estate agents in the industry, which is still a problem, but we have our processes in place to mitigate that process. We obviously are aware that the There's a lack of service delivery within our internal process, not delivering in terms of EAD mandate. But in terms of automation, we should be able to fulfill and achieve our standards. And also, see, we are a self-funded organization, so we may not have adequate resources to actually achieve those targets, but we are working within the financial structure to our revenue collection strategy so that we can gain those resources. Next program we look at is education and training. The function is basically to educate consumers and property transaction in this environment, facilitate the education and training of state agents of ethics, best business practice and property transaction, and also the new function that we'll be looking at is to perform research and further raise awareness on property transaction and industry environment. And broken down into the sub-program of consumer education, and there we are planning, obviously with partnerships with other entities, to reach 2 million consumers over a 5-year period in terms of awareness. And then the second sub-program stakeholder demographic transformation. Again, we're looking at achieving or placing 10,000 candidates with the state agents from previously disadvantaged background over the next 5 years. Then again, property market research and development is the other sub-program that we have, and where we're planning to create an information system that will provide data on market trends and information and be able to supply that to relevant stakeholders on a quarterly basis. Especially in subsidized and affordable housing. State agent education and training, in there we will ensure that 4 PDE the NMI health categories exam, the exams that are for the NQF level 4 and 5 students. And then we also will provide them the necessary material and ensure that they get the results on time. We've also got a continuous professional development process in place, which runs over a 3-year cycle. So we'll ensure that we comply with all the educational requirement regulations in the provision of that, of the CPD. And also we'll still create awareness of new developments and pertaining to estate agents practices by doing the roadshows that we normally do. Resources. I think the highlight there is just that Swaziland One Estate Agency of 36 million, which we plan to receive and grow over the next couple of years to obviously finance the placement of the learners. And that's basically not on our budget, but it's money that we'll receive from Service CETA to finance the learners. So we'll actually pay them, EAD will actually be doing the payment of the estate agents itself. So we'll pay them a stipend of 2,500 for the intern and 1,500 for the learner. In terms of risks, we just concerned about the institute being qualified individuals operating as state agents. So we basically will be more involved in the actual running of the education and training of them. And then we're concerned about the increase in the number of buyers of residential property lacking understanding real estate agents. There's going to be a huge consumer drive for consumer education in terms of property industry. We've actually got a strategy in place which we're working on for the next financial year. Again, as we say, financial constraints, which is highlighting that it's self-funded, so we just have to look at options to actually, other options to actually raise finance to finance our tasks. And then our last one was just a concern about the the CPD process, but now it's, the project is being implemented and is running as per the project plan. Administration is just looking at, obviously, at the back office elements where we need to comply with the regulation, the EAD policies. We need to resolve stakeholder queries, and we also need to maintain a good vacancy rate. And also, in terms of information technology strategy, we need to ensure that it's adequately implemented. So, in terms of the regulatory compliance, we just have to make sure that all audit fines that are raised in respect of best practice legislation are reduced to zero. Stakeholder satisfaction, we need to resolve 95% of our queries as per the standards set, i.e. 48 hours. That's basically the public and client. And then we need to ensure 100% compliance to the service plan manual, which we've now implemented. In terms of vacancy rate, we just need to make sure that at least it's minimum of, we should reach a target of 11%. And the IT infrastructure, the IT steering committee normally sets a IT strategy, and we need to then respond to that. This is achieved as per the plan. And then just resources, just saying that a majority of our resources actually go to the back office. And in terms of risks, we are aware that the risk is lack of service delivery, and saying automation will assist us in obviously meeting that target or mitigating that risk. And then incorrect, incomplete management information for decision making is one of the risks in respect of IT in the business. And then the IT systems are meeting business requirements. And we have a TA team actions to actually ensure that those risks are addressed. Damage to the image and reputation of AD. Obviously, that's perception of our stakeholders out there. And we're saying that these are also a risk which we address so that we can meet our objectives. And then the last program is the Fertility Fund, where we administer the Fertility Fund. And the process there is in respect of claims paid to property consumers and also the interest received in respect of the state agents within different trust accounts. We've set objectives in terms of that we're saying that 50% of the claims lodged should be completed within 6 months, and that in terms of interest received, we should collect 50% of all interest that is receivable to EAB or to the fund within 30 days of becoming due. And that's the extent of the cost that will be incurred in administering that fertility fund. And then in terms of risk, we're looking at erosion of fertility fund due to obviously the large claims that come in. Our investment strategy does not allow us to meet the targets. We also have an issue with recovering of claims paid. And then again, in terms of the fact that the claims that come in affect our solvency rate, is becoming a risk. And in terms of the legal course that we have to follow to actually discipline some of the state agents is borne by the fund. That there's no limits on claims, and claims from the fund arising from, again, debts of trust money by legal estate agents. So we have the mitigating controls in place. However, we are also looking at the renewed legislation to actually come up with regulation that would assist us in mitigating this fertility fund risk. From here, it's just basically just covering the same program or sub-program objectives and just breaking them down into performance indicators, which we've gone through. So we've got compliance, the program, and then the sub-program targets, which we have which we have put in place for the next 5 years and broken it down per year. And then education and training, administration, and the fertility fund. Okay, so I'll hand over. Oh, and then obviously we raise elimination of title deeds backlog as an addendum of the strategic plan, which is saying we are aware that we will be involved in with the backlog and also the issue of title deeds, but it's not necessarily part of our strategic plan based on the fact that it's not part of our mandate as per the EA Act. Can I hand over to Aubrey to complete the finance part?
Thank you very much. Can do the finance part and also if the title deeds cut, we come back at it because a presentation was done to the portfolio committee outside.
And training as well as administration. We have budgeted about 31 million. Of course, a lot under compliance to ensure that we are able to deal with the complaint that are coming from the property consumer. And education and training, we budgeted just over 15 million to assist with training of estate agents, as well as ensuring that they also keep up to date with the trends in the property market. And under administration, we budgeted just over 65 million, where we also we deal with queries that arises from the consumers to ensure that we deal with them promptly. And also, included there is the IT infrastructure to ensure that we implement systems to ensure that all the objectives that are set are met timely. And the agency to the two funds, we budgeted about 74 million, which is mainly to deal with claims that arises from property consumers that have been defrauded by estate agents. Okay, this is just a dashboard report, just in summary, just indicating the breakdown of the budget. As you are aware, that EAD is also a self-financing entity. So we also have a budget for income revenue that we expect to generate to ensure that we are able to meet these objectives. So the total operating cost, including that of the fidelity fund for 2015-2016, at 187 million. And our income projections for the same period is just over 187 million. So that will be sufficient to assist us to meet those objectives of this program.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? That's the presentation from the ESTEC International Sports, otherwise known as EAAP. Any questions of clarity? Any other thing that you want to hear? Honorable Memezi, Honorable Ghana, Honorable Tole, Honorable Ngangabashi, Honorable Papa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Mr. Skaba and Aubrey, for your presentation. I think it's beginning to show that you understand why you are there. We appreciate it. My first point is to appreciate them, in particular on that learner program, the unemployed graduates and the children, also from disadvantaged communities, because we know your environment of your career. So we want to appreciate, we're looking forward to you giving us steps on how you're moving on that one. If you can even now to indicate if there are already grounds that you have covered, if you have, so how far you have moved. Also, in spreading across the country as well, but noting that we know the metropolitan areas where to see the impact of this. Also, if you can elaborate on the your model, you said you are also now involving SAQA. I don't know whether you are already appointed by SAQA already, so maybe you can clarify that point. It was quite relevant that our children can now, through your own program, become qualified. So I think we appreciate that. Also, having said, mainly the work of this entity needs our support. I think it's promising to change the proper relations in South Africa. We understand the environment we want, but I think the determination to the presentation is appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Member.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Just a few questions. One that relates to the fidelity funds receipt. I think in the big or thickish book compared to the presentation, you did mention something along the lines of the funds not coming in very well. If you can just explain, is it due to estate agents not renewing their licenses, or there are some more renew and not paying? And then secondly, it's and it's linked to what Honorable Memez is asking, because you have this one estate agent, one learner program. And I want to put this as a more in the field of strategy. As you do your title deeds, you'll find that there are quite a lot of there are 3 million subsidy houses that have been built that far, and there's a lot of informal selling of those houses there. I'm not sure whether as part of your internship, because the internship program and this one is the one later, do you encourage the new recruits to look at opportunities in those projects, because I wouldn't expect a new recruit to start selling houses that we see when we fly, because we see when we fly, there are those houses that are there that you just wish you were in one of them. So I just want to check your involvement in the government subsidy house, because there is a transaction that goes on in there. And then finally, this is not in your presentation, it's not in any report, but it's just an interest of mine, because there's been back and forth regarding it. How far is EAB with the practitioner bill? Because there's a deadlock between Reposa and a lot of organizations around this field. If you could just give an update in terms of how far is EAB, because I understand EAB is the one that Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ka, Honorable Stolt.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. My question, first one is on the last page of the presentation. The air budget political outcomes, so 2015-2016, they say 187,696, but at their presentation, they are 197,696. They can just tell us what happened, because there's something wrong there. And the other one, Chairperson, is the one on the strategic plan on page 18. The baseline, they are talking about the queries. 85% of queries are received from stakeholders are resolved within 48 hours. How many queries have they received? A month or daily or? And the other Chairperson on the page 19, the same document, they are talking about IT system not meeting business requirements. What are the challenges? And the last one, Chairperson, on the presentation, they are talking about the stakeholders' awareness. When are they planning or prepared to go into those awareness campaigns?
Thank you very much, Honorable Nathanas.
You were once taken to court in relation to your current legislation, which is very narrow focus on real estate agent. On my question is, when are you starting the completion? When are you going to complete the new legislation that you talked to? The current mandate of your entity. And the second one is last year we raised the issue of title deeds held up at the Department of Rural and Rural Development and Land Affairs. My question is now that the Chairperson has indicated that we have received a comprehensive report on that, but my question still is, how is your working relationship in relation for you to be able to sort out information from them for your data and dealing with the backlog? Are you finding any difficulties? If the answer is yes, have you sought the intervention of the Department of Human Services? Because it's better for two departments, interactions are better among the two departments and the entity going direct to another department to source information. The other one talks to the risk. You have clearly identified the risk on the Facility Fund Administration, but how you manage those risks doesn't come out clearly compared to when you were able to to outline the mitigations on the program of work administration. But on this program, if it's a different administration, that comes. And I'm particularly very much interested on your CNG that talks to lack of the fee, lack of recovery of the claim state. She claims that in funds arising from theft of trust money by illegal estate agents, which is very high in the country, in this organization or institution of yours. The last one, Chairperson, deals with the job creation on the side that's talked about, but also a program of administration. Your baseline, it has 20% vacancy rate, and really on administration is totally unacceptable. It's totally unacceptable because we have a number of unemployed graduates and people with certificates on administration. So you can't just have a vacancy rate of administration. You can tell us about specialized fields and qualifications, but administration, when can the Chairperson, like in a quarter, in 3 months' time from now, to get a feedback. What have you done in reducing the circular expenses? Remember, the president is always talking about the job opportunity, and you can't switch people to do this kind of a vacancy rate in an administration.
Thank you very much, Chair. Three points. One is there is an mention of a lot of other activities in your mandate where I think they interrelate with or overlap with other agencies. Do you have any specific communication where you might make sure that you have the integration process? For instance, if you talk about the issue of the countries. And then the next one, in this process of training, do you have any partnership or some agreements with any institution, the teacher associations, so that in the training they produce what you want, what not what they want in the market? And then lastly, on your slide 20, that's where you are talking on targets. In one of the areas, you indicated that you're targeting 90% of certificates within 6 months. But interestingly, with other issues, it's interesting that you talk 100%, and I'm impressed by that 100%. But what is the rationale there to target only 90% by the fifth year in the target state?
Thank you very much. I don't know who's responding, but I'm handing it back over to the agency to respond to the questions of clarity from the Honourable Member.
I think I'll just manage the process, and we need further clarity from the other members that will obviously come in. I think the first question was in respect of the one learner, one state agent, and I was giving the stat of where we are currently. And I so happened to project manage this process at the time, at this time. Our target for this 2014-15 financial year was to place 700 learners and 106 interns. And that was basically a target set on agreement between EAB and Salesforce CETA. And at the moment, we are 8% there in terms of actually recruiting the learners and actually setting up them up with the state agents. In other words, they're now in the process of the interview process, and what we're waiting for is the documentation. We do have a deadline of the 31st of March due to the financial year of service receipt. So that we actually launching on the 1st of April. So the learners will actually start the process with the state agents the 1st of April. And as I said, 80% of them will be actually working with the state agents. And the other 20% obviously will start within April, maybe May, but hopefully we'll need to start. And then from there, we're going to need to target as per the strategy plan in terms of the year-end targets. So yes, the process is in place, and we are achieving our target. In terms of SAQUA, we are now appointed professional body from that perspective, so we now have the full rights to actually
formulate our own study process, material, and also the exams. So therefore, we no longer require on service CETA to actually issue, you know, plus the right to issue the certificates on our behalf. And then the second question was Fidelity Fund certificates. The fact that the funds, or I would assume, I remember I was referring to the fact that the funds are decreasing in terms of revenue in Fidelity Fund certificate. And I think Aubrey might come here a bit to sustain that. But I think one of the issues is the fact that in terms of renewals, we have become more stricter in terms of compliance, and therefore what we're finding is that the estate agents are not renewing as they used to in the past. The fact that, and that's also in respect of the, well, one of the compliance issues is that the estate agents need to issue an audit report by the 30th of June every year, and we were finding that there were lots of state agents which were not compliant, and we actually now bolstered up that department to ensure that we strip of it, and we therefore started to block the state agents from receiving Fidelity Fund certificates if they had, if they did not comply with that requirement. Do you have anything to add?
Okay, and just to add on that, as we also, as we do block those estate agents that don't have a valid Fidelity Fund certificate, we also conduct inspections so that we can identify those estate agents that are trading illegally. And therefore, we conduct disciplinary hearings to those estate agents to ensure that eventually they also comply.
All right. I think the third question was in regard to subsidy houses, that there's actually opportunity for the learners and the interns to be involved with the trading of subsidy houses of 3 million. As part of the learnership program, we've actually encouraged, or one of the questions we received from the state agents, what's our benefit? And we basically responded to say, if you take on these learners, you will be in seen as a preferable estate agent to actually be involved with selling and buying on subsidy houses. So in that manner, we are trying to encourage that the current estate agents actually work with their learners to actually, or teach them through selling subsidy houses to be involved in that respect. And hopefully once they become estate agents, they can take that role going forward. Okay. Fourth question was on the status of the Property Practitioners Bill. What I was going to say is that although we are custodians of the bill, but the actual implementation and operation is more with the department. So maybe they can respond to that from that perspective. Okay. And then there was a budget discrepancy on page 19.
Okay. I think the question was around audited outcomes for 2013-2014.
On 2016-2016 budget, the difference of 10 million
compared to what we have here in the APT. And the difference was because we had to remove the projected budget of Title D.
Okay. Just for the sixth question, how many queries did we receive? How many queries do we receive a month? I think that varies depending on the event. I mean, if we are, for example, launching the CBT program, we could have a lot of queries. And if we are launching one learner, so we can't determine a standard amount that we receive a month, but I think minimum we receive over 800,000 queries a month. The IT system is not meeting requirements as a risk. Yeah, we're just raising that to say that it's just basically the integration between the IT and the business that maybe is not working, because obviously what we require from the business sometimes doesn't, the IT cannot fulfill that requirement. The ninth one, title deeds on working formation for the data and backup.
Just a few responses around the short hiking and the nature of the relationship, the Department of Rural Development. We start out by saying there are issues that we agree to agree, and there are others where we agree to disagree. Right? So, and the easier ones, we have a very, very good working relationship with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform on Title Restoration Project. They are standing members on the National Steering Committee, both at a national level as well as at a provincial level. So both in terms of oversight as well as the day-to-day management of projects on the ground, they are active participants to the project. When we say rural development, they in fact are two key branches or divisions or departments within rural development. And while it's commonly understood, the deeds office played an integral part. We should not neglect the very important work that the Surveyor General's office does as well. So in both instances, we've in fact identified two very important interventions. With regard to the SG's office, it's in fact been found that there are quite a few human settlements projects that have been undertaken and completed, but where those properties still reside in the name of the state. And so by implication, title cannot be issued. So there is the first very, very close intervention that we will be undertaking alongside of the Surveyor General's office. As far as the deed registry is concerned, we've also found now that there are quite a few lodgements that have been made, and in fact deeds that have been processed and registered, but that have never been claimed by the appointed conveyancers. We in fact now in the process of determining exactly how big those numbers are, and in fact represents the low hanging fruit insofar as cutting back into the registration backlog. For the ones that we agree to disagree on, very similar to the question that you asked around the honourable member, that you asked around the SOEs and land. There are some institutions where they are self-funded. And much like the EAAB, the deeds registry is a self-funded institution. The way in which they derive funding is by way of these searches. And so the question, of course, is, well, for this project, are we able to access deeds or deeds records without having to incur those costs? It's a conversation that is ongoing, and it's a conversation that we have via the Department of Human Settlements. But much in the same way as an SOE would be loath to simply donate a piece of land where clearly there is market value to be derived, and by income, by implication, funding scheme that is to be benefited, in much the same way the deeds office finds itself in a similar situation. We are ever able to get around that for the benefit, for the purpose of the title, the Mental Restoration Project, and so it don't see it as an insurmountable problem. Chair, if I may, just in further to what Nikita had responded to around the One Learn, One Estate Agent program and its relevance to the subsidized market. Not at all contradicting what you're saying, but I do believe that the One Learner, One Estate Agency program would have failed if it confined those learners to the townships. Very simply. I mean, we certainly don't see these learners operating in the townships until the retirement date, all right? Besides which, if we look at the estate agencies that are already placed, those are in fact the estate agencies that are not operating in the township market, that are operating in the higher end of the market. So we certainly have every aspiration that as much as I started out with a Mazda 323, moved up to something else, and moved up to something else, in much the same way we'd like to see the people who graduate through this program to be able to move from the townships to further up the property, the residential property market. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify the issue of the legislative program, all the bills, even those which are going to be amended on behalf of entities, are in the legislative program of the department. Hopefully, this bill will reach this committee probably in the second half of the new financial year, which is 2015. I just wanted to clarify that there is a legislative program which is obviously determined by the leader of the business of government. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tempo. You want to ask?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's not working. Yes, sir. I just wanted to add, sir, that the property practitioners could make some media aware that it was part of the cabinet meeting agenda last year that was withdrawn around October because more work has to be done on it. So that is where it is currently. And in addition, then, with regard to the 10 million which was actually raised, I just also wanted to input that the matter is under discussion. I think there is general agreement that we cannot expect the EAB to do more work around the title deed restoration without funding. But there is a need that will be funded. However, that matter is still under discussion, and perhaps it might be premature for us to include it on the presentation. But we are discussing, there are discussions taking place between ourselves, the department, and the EAB chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for those clarities and questions. Maybe one of the areas that there's been some question around the issue of the deeds and the deeds. I think at some point the portfolio committee must take a walk and go to the deeds office and just go there and do some oversight. We'll do that when we come back from the research. I think we must do that for ourselves so that we can have an appreciation and understanding of what is going on. Thank you very much, Chief from the AAP. So the department will be hoping that we are going to be updated continuously on the bill. We are aware, because both the question that has been raised by Honorable Tukwana and Honorable Tumalakabashi around the issue of the bill is critical, because there are time frames that we should stick to around that. Thank you very much. The new kid on the block, come forward. At least this time around, you're not going to tell us that you don't have anything to report, we didn't have any money, wara wara wara. Last day your report was very short.
we had these things because we didn't have any, we were new. Now you must tell us, since you were, the time you were new, you are not a newborn anymore. Now. What has it done so far? Over to you. Are you ready? When you are ready, you can start. Another good gentleman. It is quite interesting to know that both the AAB and Sisson is a men club. No comments there.
Good morning, and the honorable members of Parliament of the Portfolio Committee. I hope God is continuing to bless you. For a record, Madam Chair, CSOS is starting to look very progressive for the life. More than 50% of the executive is female. It just happened that they are not here. But when you do an oversight visit, man, you will be received and be welcomed by them. Just to make a brief introduction to the people who will be making the presentation on our members. Mr. Tema Tetra, the Chief Ombud, will be dealing with the strategy side, which is non-financial. And then Mr. Temba Mabuya will be making the Chief Financial Officer, who will be talking to the finance. And God being my helper, I will try to answer questions after the presentation. We now hand over to the Chief Ombud.
Thank you very much. You not only become a man, but you must be a chamber to be employed.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, my Chair. And to the members of the portfolio committee, honorable member, and my colleagues. We want to brief the chair to give you all the details of what we do. Just to recall, page 1-6 of Monday, our main function, key priorities, strategic overview, fiscal strategic objective, legislative mandate and policy framework, and we touch on the foundation structure, stakeholder and partner profile, risk that we face as a new kid at the block and how we intend to mitigate that. And on the planning session, the strategic plan, the APP, and of course the CISOS budget. The CISOS founding mandate chair, as you know, we are founded by the CISOS Act 9-11, promulgated on the 11th of June 2011, that established CISOS as a public entity and has been classified as Schedule 3A in terms of the KFMA. The main function of CISOS is to develop and provide dispute resolution, train conciliators and adjudicators at SEM in our employ, and regulate, monitor, and control quality of the professional society governance documents, and take custody and preserve and provide assets to the public of those documents, and of course maintain the FCMA, which is the Professional Titles Management Act. The key priority, chair, as we are taking off now, the staff is there, we have the infrastructure. Now, beginning of the financial year, starting next week, we will be able to have possible, best possible staff, which we have, systems and policies. And they were busy now. We already have the infrastructure offices with the state agents of transport, and we are currently looking with them together as we expand in Cape Town and in Devon. We have finalized our digital resolution model, which has been approved by the board. We have met various stakeholders in the industry, NAMA in the major one for us, and the homeowners association as well. It has been an ongoing interaction and with them. Of course, sooner after the regulations will be engaging them on the regulations itself. We have developed the funding model provided by the Act, which will have to be approved by the board next week before it goes for consultations and to the minister as well. And then we start to roll it out after we engage the industry as well in terms of the model. And of course, in conjunction with the department, work on the launch and the operational creation of CISOS. And we're ready to implement the field controls and work out almost all of the systems that have been approved by the board chair. This was strategic overview. Our vision is to establish CISOS as a well-established resolution services within the scheme. The mission to facilitate well-established dispute resolution service and promote good governance of community scheme. By consistency, just remind members, we mean the body corporate, we mean the homeowners association, the cooperative, we mean the homeowners association, and the villages for retired people. All those are community schemes. And of course, Sherlock, let them out. Our values and service excellence, independence, transparency, integrity, innovation, and of course, fairness underpinned by the principles of the Ubuntu. From the strategic objectives that we presented previously, after meeting the department, we agreed that SDGs should combine and explore. The first strategic objective, of course, is the provision of the resolution service to the community scheme. The second strategic objective is taking custody and control of schemes, governance documents, which are scattered all over from the DIS office to municipalities and to assistant and to the company offices at Green GTR. We have engaged with entities in Mexico, of which we have now finalized them. After their conventions yesterday, they have agreed to sign the MOU. We have been engaging with them. We get a great question from the company's office within DTI, which we have been linked with them. The new cooperatives have been created electronically. We had a bit of a challenge with the case office because they wanted us to pay to take over those custody departments, those custody documents. But after engaging the DGs, we have now about to reach the conclusion that we don't have to pay for those documents. And they are looking at the MOU which we are signing with them, which has been prepared. So at least we are having joy now and with them as well. Strategy for post-mortem administration to show that this was managed efficiently and effectively in a manner that I'd like to tell you I have mentioned. The fourth strategic objective, of course, is the management of the station access management act in conjunction with the department. This is critical because that's where there will be used monitoring the code of conduct of the managing agents in terms of how they do their work, because they have to sign all of them, the code of conduct, where there's a lot of complaints about discrimination on the management station side in respect of who should rent or stay in a certain complex. So we are ready now looking at various models of the code of conduct of the managing agent chairperson. And also in terms of this act, that's where the advisory council for the minister we have to be created, for which the department have been pushing on them since this act has been called to commence simultaneously. They are working on the nomination of the members of the advisory council to advise the minister in any amendments on the legislation relating to community schemes. The legislative and policy frameworks that we derive our powers and members is of course the Constitution, the FMA, the CISO Act, the State Agents Affairs, of which we work very close together. So far this relates to the managing agents, the Sectional Titles Act, the Sectional Titles Management Act, as you have mentioned, how critical it is, and the Housing Act. Of course, there are the policy frameworks of government that we derive and work, and we have adopted them as well in building up. More so the National Development Plan, in terms of different housing and settlement facilities for all citizens. The medium-term strategic framework, particularly related to the department's target of 1.5 million housing opportunities over 5 years. This is the organizational structure, chair of the board of the CISO. We have the board chaired by Reverend Dr. Kamana. We already have the company secretary now, Mr. Aruma Rasen, who is the company secretary. And I'd like to put into the chair of course, and Joseph Lyon, who is the Kumbu, the adjudicator general, already in place. Is a lady.
It's a woman.
It's a woman and the lady. And also the executive manager of corporate services. She's also a woman and the lady. Stakeholder and partner profile. This chair are our main stakeholders, of which we started engaging them and meeting with them. They involve us in almost most of the decision they do. The some of our colleagues have just mentioned the giving the measures and we engage them through staff, of course, provincial departments, expert, and most of the Department of Rural Development and Health from the Department of Treasure and National Treasure, and Department of Trade, the Fisher, and the Entrepreneur, Banking Council, which are all also are our colleagues, but the most critical to us are the Association of the Homeowners. They approached us, which we pledged. They contact us. We have regular meetings with them. The legal fraternity, the compares, association, the academia, more so in terms of the academia, because there's a new kind of law now, a property law within the community scheme that has been created. And we encourage that in that law property, they teach students so that they have a good fleet of lawyers who understand the changes now in the legal legislation creating property. NAMA, traditional, the government is very critical, as I mentioned, so on, that they are management agents, that's a number of millions of management agents. Not so in terms of them addressing our code of conduct for their matters. This is the register. We have managed to identify the register we're facing. Most of them, with the medication we have rated them low, except of course the IT systems that we need to develop for ourselves, because this is a unique kind of organization. So we are very mindful that we procure the IT system, the case management system, that you know, we don't in the case need our predecessors or within the permit here. So we put it a bit high, but the probability of it now arriving low, of what we know happened, and also the assistance of the chair in this, because that's involved in most of the institutions, so I'm very, very cautious with dealing with this. These are our planning sessions, of course, we have a fiscal strategy plan in year for 5 years, which I can just put forward in terms of our strategy for section one. Most of us provide the team with institute services all of South Africa. This is now in place. The facilities, we have a health facilities, the national office, and the housing office as well. This is our indicators in terms of the accessibility of which we have. And we just mentioned on this issue, Chair, that we already received about 100 complaints since October when the member said that we have opened. We take those complaints in terms of testing them and seeing what kind of this. But we do tell the complainants that we cannot at this stage entertain the complaints until certain that the regulations have been finalized. And also, the president has signed the date of the commencement at the end. Again, within the strategic objectives, we have already established the dispute resolution model, which has been put up to the board. We have established the funding model for approval. Again, we have provided that whatever service we want to provide should be on a user-paying principle. Second strategic objective, of course, is taking a custodian control of the schemes. We have already advanced on this because we need to identify all the other institutions that have these documents with them. We have engaged almost all of them, and they are willing, of course, to take over. Most of them, they take them over as if they were yesterday. Because they don't even have the blades to keep them. At the same time, also procure the blades as well, where we can keep these tons and tons of documents as we work forward to store them electronically as well. So we are advanced on this one. I've mentioned those three or four institutions that have been keeping this statement. We're all now in the process of signing MOUs with them to actually took over the statements. mentioned earlier on about the IT in order to keep those records and get proper record management system, and at the same time improve the governance of the community governance schemes, making sure that we check more so that they come from the body corporate to see that they comply with the act in terms of the rules also and governance rules that's prepared by the Section of Health Management. So we have a section that we ensure that we record those governance rules. We respect them and show compliance. The desk of the Section of the Chair has been that women and gender in an effective manner. And of course the skills as well. So we have a number of management developed in terms of financial management and effective planning, supply chain and risk within the organization and so on. We have an effective board that meets regularly with the target of what time they we have the adequate resource. Resource human and human resources within us, yeah. And of course within the line of the cafe because that's our staff in the federal line in for the 2015 of which we achieved. Again, on the training and development units within us, the communications department to ensure that we communicate with our stakeholders, they understand what we do, that the stakeholder, the management plan, including the customer care, is accepted and given the time for you to respond as we take a complaint. The response is contained in our brief, which we put in the end, it goes down even to the performance plan, performance agreement of those that are supposed to ensure that our customers are satisfied. Again, on this strategic objective, we're working hard on this information technology in long term to see that as we continue to have the new IT system. We have an approved system by the board, which we are now again, on the code of conduct, it is important to have this code of conduct that the managing agents, I know the EAB is a proper code of conduct for the teacher. We will be so hard to document them on the first one as well for the adoption by the managing agents. And show that all the managing agents are registered and report we have. Database of all of them before they can just like the somehow they get some commission before they can comment. Remember, this is the APP for this financial the establishment and the operationalization of our dispute supervision practices. I mentioned that we already have housing office and national office. We now finalizing the housing office, by the way, I must have mentioned Cape House for the home. It's also Cape House for housing and Cape House for Northwest and Mpumalanga as well. And the Devon Cape office will be and be catering for the state. By the way, we're not going to not open the office in today. This is just a temporary measure based on the kind of work that we see. We may even have special offices there and so forth. In Cape Town, we are already looking for accommodation close to Parliament here. And the Western Cape Town office will also cater for the Eastern Cape. And we will also cater for the Northern Cape. So we are very well in place for this. We already have a provincial ombud for housing, for Zulu Natal, catering for all the regions that mentioned, and put question A.
Which might be a woman.
And then. So the baseline on this one of my mentioned was the sufficient of head of faith and case staff, which has already been affected. And of course, the three provincial offices, which pay for almost all nine provinces, which already have staff on that. Then, on strategic one, the development and the implementing of the HR model, the board has approved the HR model that I just mentioned. Now, the holding is getting the regulations in place, getting the act passed and the open launch, and we change almost all the provinces. And that, of course, the targets are set out in respect of Q1 and Q2. We may find out that we will be starting to take actually all the complaints and deal with them once they are those students I've just mentioned have been done. The taking over in respect of strategic objective 2, the taking over of the management of this governance document is already in place. Was developed and we made designing this MOU within a week or so. And we will be taking control of the team's governance document as well and keeping them within our record. And members of the public and friends will have access in one space, one entity that has been managed to be the custodian of this region. The objective 3, the ensuring of the efficient and effective management of software, and as just mentioned, everything is in place. The financial systems, controls, and policies have been approved by the board. The board now is in the process of approving the funding model for which we will be engaging with the stakeholders. The financial models in respect of FEM and others have long been approved by the board. And the risk management policy and then has been approved as well. Again, on the management, which is critical to us, the board is effective and meets regularly together with the subcommittees as well. So we have a company structure now to ensure that the initiative both for processes and reporting. We have an adequate HR facility and management in that, and for HR policy that is approved by the board, including training of staff. Again, just to finalize this, we have a training on legal services within the office as well to ensure that we get also a contract management services within us. Communications plan is in place. We have a person that deals with their communication. Who is
a lady and a woman?
And where they treated that abstract a little bit?
Oh, abstract. The community scheme database system is established and shared. And I'm on the last strategy now, which is the sectional crisis management. There we have set our target. We're in the process of funneling the code of conduct, register the denomination agencies, and have the code functional advisory council. This is the ministerial appointment channel mention, but we put it in there. It's also important for us to do our work. Because it is the chief ombud that chairs the advisory council. So we keep on reminding the partners to ensure that the goes on government gazette and set up the country the advisory council. Then I will hand over to the chief financial officer to take us through the budget.
Therefore, please outdo Mr. Mutesa in terms of time.
Thanks, honorable members.
MTF, that's the pictures on the screen. Before maybe I could go deep into the figures, I just want to highlight some principles that were used in the achievement of the budget compilation, what has been taken into account. Over a period of 3 years, we're looking at when is this going to be self-sufficient, based on the fact that we are currently relying on a grant, but over a period of time the grant will keep on declining. So we have to find a means on how we can get another part of revenue that will sustain CISOS. We also took into account the main factor that will make CISOS to be sustainable, the issue of implementing a funding model that is still in progression. We are querying and critiquing that model at the moment, but soon we'll come up with an ultimate answer that we'll be implementing the model, which, by the way, affects the regulations. So we can't at the moment implement the regulations without implementing the model. Another thing we took into account in terms of Section 22 of the CISOS Act is the revenue streams that were indicated there. And the model should take up those streams as variables. One critical revenue stream is the cost recovered benchmark. That whatever if the grant comes to a zero, and then we implement a model, it should be able to sustain us from a cost recovery point of view. That's a benchmark from a cost point of view going forward to make resource sustainable and viable. We also have taken into account the other financial resources, like the interest to be levied on accounts that will be in arrears. We also took into account well, there are the seven main factors as indicated on Section 22. However, certain assumptions have been put into place. The launch of the CISOS that we envisage to take place in the 15-16 financial year, and also the operationalization of CISOS in quarter two, and also taking into account the implementation of the levy. By the way, the levy, there are a lot of factors that are taking place within this levy model. There are processes that need to be followed before we implement the levy. So we've taken that in our budget, you see. We've taken that into account. But when the time comes to implement the levy, and the time when the levy will start coming in, it won't be in the first or second quarter. The budget will change as we move forward from that. And then we also took into account the CPI. The inflation rate into account in the compilation of the budget. However, this is our budget.
Okay. Thanks, sir. Yeah, in the 2014-15, you remember initially that will be 15-22 staff members. And then with the budget then, and then for 15-16, with that budget of 59 million, with the personal budget where we anticipate to recruit around 30 staff members. And then in the MTF period, 2016 and 17, 18, 35 and 47 respectively. Thanks, sir. This is our budget. I'll just give a summary. I want to item by item. Yes, we did receive 30 million, as indicated in the allocation, that in the first week of December. And then out of the budget of 40, and then there was 10 million that was ascending, came in this month. And then we, out of that, we managed to spend 5.7 of the day in the first quarter of the financial year 15. You might ask what happened to the 25, obviously, when you look at the entire picture that was received. The 25 was committed to the projects that are still undergoing supply chain processes. We've committed to 25.9, and then we add that it is the now, we'll ask the next question, what will happen to the 10 million that we received this month? That has also been committed to administrative expenses, And also other expenses like the rental that we pay to our landlord EAD. And then the other one is what we do with the procurement actions. Chair, maybe before I close this, there's one contentious issue I just want to talk about. Maybe we are still wondering about this community scheme levy income. As I explained at the moment, it's still at an advanced stage now. We'll be implementing soon, but it needs to go some rigorous processes. This levy is the one that CSOS is going to rely on in order to take into consideration that our previous budget have been reduced due to this austerity measure as introduced by National Treasury. Yes, we need with less in order to produce more, but the road is hard there, you know, to continue with the austerity budget. But as our ambition was to have a fully operational source around the country. I think I attend that question.
Thank you very much. Even anticipating the questions that the members have asked, that was good presentation. I know the members have promised me, honorable, that they won't ask a lot of questions because they know that the questions will come mainly in the next financial year. For now, we are still on holiday. They told me that they will just ask a few. So let me just say a few. And then we move forward quickly to the next topic. You see, I told you there's nothing. Another good guy, another good memory, another good aggression. Just precise and to the point, so you can go to the next presentation.
In your opening, I think what your question is like, you're talking about wasteful expenditure, and which might lead to a body outcome that's not favorable. If you could just, in a brief way, just explain to us what, because we are a new kid and we don't want new people to get used to the illness of other entities of, you know, wasteful expenditure.
Let them all ask them.
Thank you very much, Sir. Indeed, one question, and this question is applicable to all entities in fact. We appreciate the work you've been doing, but we think on the ground, the marketing education aspect is not done effectively enough. So people would love to know that you are existing. So in many of our areas, so that's all we want to hear more. All entities must take that into account. Marketing must get to where we stay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm told by one of my members, my colleague and member today, that have missed the place. My question, Chairperson, not the question, it's not a comment, so much one. I like the way you have outlined your provincial register and the mitigation plan. Because you are able to tell us how are you going to manage the risk. That's what we want to see all the time. And then secondly, also, the way you have outlined the indicators, your output and quarterly targets. The quarterly targets are very important to us. And at least keep it up because we'll monitor those questions. My final question is, are you going to begin to spend the money? What am I saying? I don't want
but like committee, they did say it's committed, but they will respond if they say it's committed. Respond here, gentlemen, on the question.
Let me just do a general response first to say that we are very much mindful of wasteful expenditure and progress expenditure. if there's anything that concerns the board, just to ensure that they have a clean up. That is a commitment, and the selectors, they know that. And as much as there was not much activity in the previous year, but we received very clean budgets. We want to maintain that, and that's one of the outcomes that the selectors have got from me, as far as that is concerned. With regard to the, they will deal with the specific, with regard to the marketing and communication, it is not only for our business that we do that. As a new entity, it is important for us to be known that there is now this service that government is giving to people of South Africa. So we have taken upon ourselves to one of the important appointments was to appoint a marketing communication stakeholder manager to ensure that we inform the public. Our lives depends on us being known, especially given the fact that there are quite critical things that are known to the public. Main of it is the question of levies. We don't want to see an veto situation. We want to ensure that we inform as much as possible the people and also engage as much as possible the stakeholders and the people who are respected by the industry, so that when the time comes for the president to proclaim the activity of CISOs, there has been much information. The CEO has been in an interview with the print media to let the public know that we are now in existence. We've asked him to go to TV. He was running live by the day. And the Jukai General did a good job in the Lunga Lelako TV program. So we will keep on making sure that while it is important to inform the public of the existence of the service, but it is critical for our lives that we must inform the public so that the public can come in and we can start with the act. So that's one of the very important activities from the board point of view. The third one is with regard to the risk register. Actually, what has been presented here, Honorable Member, is a function of the outcome of a strategic session between the board and the executive. We spent 2 days going through everything, ensuring that we map ourselves for the next 5 years. How are we going to do that? So these issues of risk and quarterly tax support have now been reduced into performance management contracts for each executive to ensure that while we account to Parliament and government, they are also knowing that it touches on their own existence and disorganization, to make sure that there's efficiency in terms of running this organization. I don't know if you want to deal with any specifics.
Yeah, I think you've covered this. In fact, as to what the chair said, we have managed to get time slot. It's because of the new person, it took long to appoint them, and they would have become the CP ground running. We I'm sure many members and not have read the Maiden Garden. We also got a transfer from the Maiden Garden. Had that a new organization to sort out new affairs. So it was quite a long article and a business. And various other internet applications. Yeah. On the specific one, on the question asked by Mr. Kapo, on the wisdom and spending, when we came in, the board, chairing the board, also, if there's any good rest of waste equipment that they want to know about, of which, when we came, we had an issue with the receiver. The CFO was alone at the time, and then in terms of paying some taxes within SARS, so it's been delayed, and the chefs could have a huge fine for us. So that those that there could be this kind of thing. Fortunately, as I should understand, we mitigated this fine. So they agreed to write it off and then not to impose any fine for us. So there won't be any risk for the expenditure. That's why we had to disclose.
The question of whether we managed to spend the 34 million last week and the number of remaining at Tuesday. I just want to mention that the last portion of our chief staff members were appointed in
the fourth quarter. So there will be another expansion in those periods as opposed to the first and the second quarter, where I was alone. Two, yes, we've committed the 25.9 to some major projects such as the ICT infrastructure, the enterprise resource planning, all these big projects. However, the remainder of the money will take up all the stuff, admin costs, and all these fixed costs like the rental that we pay to EAB, which amount to 5 million. That's my 5 million. And the remaining 2 million is more of the procurement items in the office and private
the only thing we may request, Madam, is to help us to convince the Ministry of Finance to give us a little bit more, because they took away about 15 million rand from the regional budget in a new entity like this. So that has really created a lot of slowdown on some of the progress that we would have made. However, the quicker we have our latest time, we are looking at the situation where within 3 years we will be sent to government, give that money to other reserve and think we are able to live on our own. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. You're doing well despite the 15 million that were taken from you. I know even in the last presentation you were here last year, you were mourning the fact that they are cutting the budget. So we know and we're watching the progress and we're not doing good there. But we are also aware that this is a new entity that needs more support. Thank you very much. Obviously, the interaction with you is not going to be as cordial as this when you come next year. So at least year is still a very nice one because we are still learning to crawl. Next year will be running already, so it's going to be definitely better. But thank you very, very much. I think we, without wasting time, then let's move to the last entity, SRA. We hope this time around it won't be as bad as previous
years.
Yes, we can. So, SRA, it's over to you. We know that there's a lot that is being done in construction restructuring. So we are also so that's let us. Thank you, Acting CEO of SRA and your team. You can introduce them and then go straight to the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Acting CEO. On my left, I've got CEO Mr. Bakwani. And on my right, I've got Ms. Shaw, who is our corporate business manager. And Ms. Kutimo, who is our stakeholder engagement and institutional investment manager. Chairperson,
We have included some of the information on our presentation, which we will not necessarily dwell much on it. But suffice to say, and let me indicate that we are an institution, social housing regulatory authority, is now almost 7 years old. It has came into operations in 2008. We are here to present our strategic plan, our North Economic Plan, and the budget. Let me also indicate, Chairperson, as you are aware, that this is the entity that has experienced some leadership challenges, which are being managed, and I'm confident that with respect from the next financial year, these challenges will be fully addressed. If you look at our plans, you will also, Chairperson, notice that some of or most of our plans, they are indicated as new, based on the way that we have been planning previously. Again, our plans are in line with MTSS and the National Development and Government Priorities, and we'll also in future incorporate all the ministerial announcements that have happened, in particular the measures that affect women contractors and the participation of youth in our program. Let me also indicate, Chairperson, that we have in the past experience in a state operational budget. The PSM, who is Corporate Services Manager, will allude to that when she deals with budget. excuse me. Fortunately for us, with effect from the next financial year, we have got the new funding, which is called Institutional Investment Program, which has been approved by National Treasury. In fact, if we look at the Social Housing Act, in particular Section 11.3A, you will notice that we should have had this funding, but for some reason it was not allocated. But with my communications with the National Treasury, this budget has been provided to us. Our targets have to be in line with provincial targets. I'm indicating this, Chairperson, because in the past, when you look at the provincial targets, you will notice the social housing targets have been incorporated with CRU targets, which was making it a little bit difficult for us to attain specifically which targets are related to social housing. With effect on next financial year, with the assistance of the department, social housing targets are going to be a standalone. Then we'll be able to monitor those appropriately. Our target market, Chairperson, as you know, is addressing the low to medium income categories. This is the medium, this is the income category from who earn 1,500 to 7,500 per month. Let me then go, Chairperson, to our mandate. I won't necessarily read all the bullets that we have because they are in our act. We have to demonstrate them. But let me just indicate, emphasize bullet number four, in particular the importance of restructuring zones. If we do not have restructuring zones, we are not going to be able to deliver social housing units. And the next bullet, which also talks in terms of our mandate, it just provides us with the debt funding. Why there is a mention there of the NHFC, also it's an indication of how we should be aligned with our sister entity in delivering social housing projects. I won't read the next slide as it continues, because it is in terms of the Act. In terms of the goal of the social housing program, we've included this slide for information purposes, but just to highlight that the emphasis is on the social, economic, and spatial integration. The next slide also is for information purposes, where we have indicated our inputs, our activities, our output and outcome, in particular which talks to the beneficiaries and what is the impact of the social housing program going forward. This is in line with
the mandate of human settlement in the provision of sustainable human settlement. The next slide, Chairperson, slide number four. Number four talks to our value chain. We have included this information capability for portfolio committee members. Let me move to the next one, the shrub output, outcome and impact. This is in line with section three, which I have alluded to, also just to unpack our output and outcome. This is just now in more detail. Point number six is our strategy goal. We've got four strategy goals. Let me just consider the strategic objectives. For our goal one, which is in terms of the regulation which extended. Our strategic objective is to regulate and support social housing institutions, cooperatives, and other delivery agents. This is important to note, Chairperson, because we know that the issues of cooperatives are not receiving that much attention, but we are making an effort to make sure that cooperatives are also included in the delivery. The second goal, which talks to the sustainability and effective organization. Our objective there is to ensure sound financial governance and best practice adhering to the statutory regulations and the deadlines. And the strategic goal number three, which talks to the sustainability of development and management of social housing units. This is in support of the MTSS delivery of 27,000 social housing units. This has been indicated as the delivery target for social housing target under the MTSS. And our plans are talking to the target. The last strategic goal of the strategic goal, which talks to the capacity within the social housing sector. Our objective there is to promote and support the performance of the social housing sector. The next slide, Chairperson, talks to the STRAS program. We have got four programs as indicated there. And the first program, which is number one, our regulatory program, which is responsible for accreditation, compliance, and enforcement. The second program is institutional investment program, which deals with a capacity building grant, responsible for approval, administration, and disbursement of the institutional investment grant. Research and development of best practices become critical in our environment and also facilitate building. The third program is investment management program, which handles approval, administration, and assessment of the restructuring capital grant, which we normally refer to as RCG. Administrative program, this is a support program, which includes corporate services and the office of the CEO. Chairperson, the next slide talks to the medium term strategic I have already indicated, Chairperson, the medium term strategic framework, that in terms of this framework we are expected to deliver 27,000 social housing units. If you look at this target, Chairperson, it translates to approximately 1.8% of the human settlements MTSS target of 1.5 housing opportunities. Let me go, Chairperson, to our programs. We've got regulatory programs. In terms of our regulatory program, Chairperson, the first one is the number of accredited entities. Our function, Chairperson, as you will know, that is that of a regulatory nature. We are anticipating to regulate 75 accredited social housing entities, and that is being stated as indicated there in terms of the financial year. And the next performance indicator under this program, this is a new program as well, which we are planning to look at the number of social housing units under regulation, and cumulatively, Chairperson, we are planning to have 45,311 social housing units under regulation, and that is as indicated
in the table, I will check the room. The next indicator talks to the percentage of all social housing stock managed by fully accredited social housing institutions. This is critical, Chairperson, because if we manage to make sure that we get more fully accredited social housing institutions, this will also enable us to move faster in our delivery, and also it's going to ensure the sustainability of the sector going forward. We are planning under the second financial year, 26 of those to be fully accredited, 52% within financial year 2016-17, and 70% in the two outer years. Our next target, Chairperson, is in terms of the percentage of all audits. This talks to the building conditions audit, tenant income audits, and the tenant satisfaction survey undertaken by the social housing institutions via an automated section 15. Chairperson, it is our view that if we have a self-management system by the social housing institutions, this is how we are going to be able to enhance our delivery. And we are planning to have 100% of all audits being undertaken by social housing institutions and themselves by the year 2018-19. The next performance indicator, Chairperson, which talks to the percentage of social housing units developed using the state funds approach and regulation. Let me indicate here, Chairperson, that this is historical. We know that there are social housing units which were delivered using the state fund, but which have not been brought under regulations under the SHRAP. This is the stock that was delivered prior to the establishment of the entity. So our plan is to ensure that all those are brought under regulations going forward. And within the MTSF, we are planning to have 80% of the social housing units developed in state funds under regulation. And under our next program, which is the institutional investment program, you will notice very clearly that all our targets here are new. We are planning in terms of the institutional investment grant program, it must be implemented. This talks to the implementation of the institutional investment policy and guidelines, which we need to have before we can advance any investment. That is the plan that we have under 2015-2016. In terms of the next financial year, which is 2016-17, we will also look at the implementation of the institutional investment framework reviewed and the investment policy and guidelines. And our plan for the two outer years is that of the renewal and the last financial year of the MTSF. We are planning to have a reviewed institutional investment grant program going forward. Our next target talks to the number of the GIRA grants approved and disbursed, and this is also linked to the regulations program. This performance indicator clearly talks to the one above. We first need to have the guideline, we need to have the policy before we can actually then see how many GIRA grants that we need to approve and discuss. Our next performance indicator also talks to the number of project acquisition and visibility grants that will be approved and discussed. This is also linked to the investment management program. Chairperson, let me also indicate here that it is very much critical for social housing regulatory authority to support the social housing institution in terms of the feasibility studies going forward. The number of grants of projects that we will be doing in terms of the feasibility grants are indicated in the slide. And our MTSF target is 50. The next performance indicator talks to the number of pre-accreditation grants approved and disbursed, and this is also linked to the regulations program. Chairperson, over the MTSF period, we are planning to have 43 of these pre-accredited grants approved and dispersed, and they are split as indicated in the slide. The next slide talks to the number of general capacitation grants approved and dispersed. Again, this links to both the investment management and the regulations program. Over the MTSS period, we are planning to have 60 capacitation grants approved and dispersed, and the split as indicated in the slide. The last one, Chairperson, is the number of states of the sector reports published. Let me also indicate, Chairperson, here that we have been found wanting previously in terms of the provisioning of these reports of the state of the sector report. We have now clearly planned for it under the MTSS financial year. We will be producing one sector report per financial year. The next slide, Chairperson, talks to our investment management program. Let me set indicate, Chairperson, that if you look at under the performance indicator, we have now moved from a number of units approved into the number of units delivered, because that is what matters the most going forward. That's why also we are indicating that this is the new target. Over the MTSF period, we are planning to deliver 18,678 social housing units over the MTSF period. And that figure is split as indicated there. But let me also just talk to that in case members will be asking now the question of 13,000 versus the 27,000, which is our MTSF target. If you look at the 13,638, those are the numbers that include the 2014-15 up to 2017-18. But also let me indicate that we've got 16,129 which have already been approved, and those projects are under construction. And once these have already been costed and we know what are the delivery time frames, the figures that are indicated, they are going to change within the MTSS period. And again, we have, in terms of our pipeline, we have approved 5,398 units. This is in terms of our criteria. And this figure is being addressed under the contracting process. Chairperson, let me indicate that the figures above, which are indicated under 13,000 MTSS, they have gone through all this process. So the information that I'm providing here must still be fully finalized, with the emphasis that we will be meeting the 27,000 target over the MTSS period. Again, we have already advertised and called for the proposal social housing program in January this year. After we have gone through all the processes, that will also be factoring in terms of our delivery target. Chairperson, under administration, most of our targets are being here, Chairperson, they are indicated as new. That is also partly based on the previous challenges that we've been having. You will notice there is quite a number of policies that we need to make sure that we have put into place. This is an indication that we are planning to make sure that we put our house in order, and some of them they are of compliance nature. With your permission, Chairperson, maybe I don't need to read all of them. But in particular, I think that the members will also be wanting to know in terms of the vacancy rate, that currently we are sitting at 33% vacancy rate. That is also based on the challenges that we have been having. But now that the leadership challenges have been addressed, be accountable that we did perform the next financial year, we will be able to reduce the vacancy rate to within 5%. We have made calculated plans under this. And why also we are talking about the 5%, we are also just benchmarking with the DCSA as we are also part of government. Most of our vacancies also they are waiting for the new council to approve, so that then we will facilitate the filling of the vacancies. The last bullet talks to the number of reports on implementation of approved communication strategy. Maybe let me also just talk to this, as I'm aware that the members have also expressed concern in terms of the communication. What we are experiencing thus far is that our program is not that much well known, starting also within the human settlement sector. So it's our plan that we need to enhance our communication strategy that will include both the sector and also all our stakeholders. And in most importantly, also communication must be earmarked for our beneficiaries for the target market. The next slide, Chairperson talks to our annual performance plan, which is our ATP. With your permission, Chairperson, if I can just indicate on the annual targets only. This information we have already alluded to previously. The first one, the number of operated entities, we are planning for 60 in the next financial year. And our next target, which is also annual target, is the delivery of 26,328 social housing units, which must be put under regulations. And our next target talks to the percentage of all social housing stock managed by fully accredited social housing institutions. GHSN, we are planning to have 26% of all social housing stock managed by fully accredited social housing institutions. I have earlier on alluded to the fact, to the importance of having more stock being managed by fully accredited social housing institutions, as that will also talk to the sustainability of our program going forward. Our next delivery performance indicator talks to the percentage of building condition audits. Chairperson, I have spoken to this under our strategic plan. And our target for the next financial year is to develop the automated system pilot and improve the system, train all housing institutions that have the stock. This is done in line with the promotion of self-regulation of our social housing institutions. We used to do this ourselves, Chairperson, but we have seen that it would be best if we could promote the self-regulation before we can come to the next level. And this also is going to improve building the conditions, and this will be done on the example basis. The next performance indicator, Chairperson, talks to the percentage of social housing units developed using the state funds brought under regulation. I have spoken to this Chairperson earlier on. These are institutional strategies which were approved prior to the establishment of the trust. For the next financial year, we are planning to compile and verify the database of all social housing stock, develop a legal framework for the implementation of Section 12. This is done in relation with the Section 12 of our Act. In terms of the institutional investment program, this is still in terms of our ATP. The first one talks to the institutional investment program, which will be implemented. This Chairperson also, I have touched on this. This is the new funding that we will be getting with effect from the next financial year. Even though this responsibility is highlighted in terms of Section 11.3 of our Act, we have never seen funding. So we will be able, with it from the next financial year, to implement appropriately with the next funding that has been made available.
The next one is an the next performance indicator for the next financial year is the number of IRA grants approved and dispersed. We are planning for the annual target of 3, and they are spread in terms of the quarters. Again, Chairperson, these are the new targets. Let me also indicate, Chairperson, that from the number of IRA grants approved and dispersed up to the last one, which is the number of 8 of the sector report published, this must be linked to the project. Our next slide, Chairperson, talks to the investment management program. I have spoken for this target of 2239 for the next financial year, Chairperson, with an explanation as to how it talks to the MTSO target. Under administration, Chairperson, with your permission, I won't go too much into detail. Except to request and the members that the information that I have alluded to in terms of why we've got so many under the administration and with the emphasis also on the vacancies and how it will be dealt with. I think the maturity and self-explanation. Jefferson, with your permission, let me allow our corporate services manager to take us through our budget.
Thank you very much. In terms of the trust budget, in 2014-15, we only had an operational budget of about 34.4 million, and against a hectare budget, which was originally about 827, and 230 had to be given to NHFC, which resulted in a revised budget of 597 million. And we see that from the next financial year, 2015-16, right up to 2017-18, we received a new line item in our budget, which is for institutional investment capital budget. And really, the department has been very instrumental in ensuring that we get that additional allocation. But initially, Treasury allocated 41.9 million, and they are reducing it over the years with about 4% to 40 million and 38.4 million in 2017-18. And there was also a reduction in terms of the capital budget because we had to lose about 600 million on the RCT grant as a result of a fiscal measure taken by Treasury. And move to slide 12, which is the 2015-18 budget, and it's on page 25. And that shows the spread of the budget over the 3-year MTEF period. And it is worth noting that from our revenue, we get an operational grant, which translates to about 3% of the total revenue of the 4.5 million, and that institutional investment grant of 1.9, which is about 4%, and the restructuring capital grant makes the bulk of our allocation at 93%. And over the years, the operational grant increases by about 5% to 36.3 to end 38.2 in 2017-18. And of course, this year, the next financial year, 15-16 Treasury said because it's a new grant, they will reduce it over the years by about 4% to 40 million and 38 million respectively. And the RCG, it increases over the years from 974 million to about 1 billion in 2016-17 and 1.1 billion in 2017-18. So in terms of the split of that income, 26% is allocated towards compensation of employees and the remainder towards operational expenses. So the first split in terms of ensuring that the budget takes care of the operational needs of the organization. And over the years, you can see the percentage increases are more or less the same, or they increase by 1%. Now, in terms of goods and services, our key expenditure is on the line item of agency and support services, because the program that is the institutional investment program, the investment management program, as well as the regulations program, needs a lot of outsourced services. And another highlight from the budget is also the cost, the program-related cost for social housing, which is about 8 million over the 3-year period, and it is about 11% to 10% of the operating expenses. And also worth noting on the budget, there is an amount, new amount that was allocated for automation of the regulations unit of about 3.6 million, which takes about 5% of the budget. And the next slide, which is slide number 11, which is page 24, the previous one, it shows the budget split per various programs. And in terms of compensation of employees, about 66% goes towards administration, and then 21% investment management, and then 23% to regulations. The reason why administration is high is that there was a clear condition from Treasury when we received the 41 million that none of that money was going towards compensation of employees. So in order to make the budget transparent, we showed him that no money went towards compensation. We lumped the compensation of employees for institutional investment in the administration program. And in terms of operational expenses, it translates to 69%, of which 20% is for administration, 5% for investment management, and 72% for institutional investment, and 7% for regulations. And that is the budget in a nutshell. Chair, then I hand over back to my acting CEO to close up.
In closing, Chairperson, or before I close the challenges and the mitigation measures, I won't necessarily go to all of them because I've spoken to them. But maybe just to talk to the internal controls inefficiencies that relate to the administration and its assessment of the capital grant. What we will be doing is to make sure that the internal controls are enhanced, and also the organogram revised to ensure greater transparency and the separation of powers. Why this is more important is that previously we had sessions where there was a conflict of interest in terms of the regulatory function and the investment function that needs to be addressed. And maybe just to talk to the next one briefly, where we have not been able to perform certain functions, in particular based on the lack of the budget. That the budget that we will be getting, from the next financial year, and that we are also aiming at building capacity internally. In terms of the next one, which is talk to the underperformance, Jefferson, this is underperformance in terms of delivery, not the way that we used to plan previously, because we were planning for approval and not delivery. So we will be addressing the underperformance in terms by the targets that need to be amended from approval to delivery. The provincial targets to be aligned to the SRA and PSS targets. This is in terms of provinces. The department is about to conclude the process. But also, we will be making sure that all the provinces, they deliver social housing units, because as it stands, there are two provinces which are not delivering under this program. And also, we have started to have a coordinated pipeline of projects, because without a credible pipeline, we won't be in a position of knowing what it is that we will be delivering going forward. and also through the capacity building throughout the state. The last outreach to the communications, I have already spoken to it. But maybe just lastly, I'm just asking, we need also to look at the review of the income bands. Our income bands are from 1,500 to 7,500. With a program which is under human settlements currently in the mining hub, it excludes the target market. Hence, there is a need of looking at the income bands. And also what that will do, it will ensure that the beneficiaries which are more than 7,500 abroad also under this program, and also making an impact on private renters. And we are hoping that the private sector then will have no choice also going forward, and also to fit in and reduce their rentals going forward. Chairperson, in closing, what we are presenting is that we are committed to the MPSF target of delivery of 27,000 social housing projects, and that stakeholder relations become critical starting from all spheres of government, and also the communication that needs to be enhanced in favor of our beneficiaries. Also, Chairperson, what we are concluding is to say, in terms of the administration budget that we are short of, we fully understand that we need to provide, to demonstrate confidence before we can ask for more budget in the fiscal. Chairperson, that will be our presentation.
Thank you very much for that in-depth report and presentation, much as depressing as the 2014-2015. Any comments and clarity? Honorable Matabashe, Honorable Ghana, Honorable Menes, very brief.
And Chair, we note the re-engineering of the entity strong, and it's encouraging. Keep it up, and we monitor it. But for us to monitor properly, I always get worried when I see other indicators in a quarter is not applicable, leave, no target, and then see the target at the fourth quarter. So it means you might not be able to implement in the three quarters, and then you only implement at the end. So I've seen some number of of them still in your report, and it's really discomfort. Because I don't know, national government, I've noticed two days, and the metro still were not allowed to have a report that doesn't have any indicator. Nothing. Where I used to wait, and I'm saying here in national government, I'm also thinking.
Another broker.
Thanks, Chair. Just to start with the point that the CEO ended with, I think we do generally, maybe Chair, we need to have a committee to make the motivation. I was just busy drafting something here. But you know, the rental in the unit increase, but even higher at the inflation rate, because the rental fees are not staying the same. But the qualifying criteria is stagnant. It's been stagnant for a long time. Maybe as a committee, we need to make a proposal to review the upper limits, to put them in line with the inflation. So that the upper limit, you can do like a clear thing, then you say, I think now the upper limit for social housing should be now 10,000 if you look at the inflation thing. So I think that is a proposal that we need to go with. Then, just on the challenges, the first point, I'm not sure that's correct. You're talking about the lack of an operational budget, which I think the correct word is supposed to be not enough money for operational budget, because your other slide actually indicates that the operational budget is there. to say that you that the lack of it is kind of worries. It's as if you are saying things are not right. You're using capital funds. And then one point that you raised corporate service manager. Under the budget, around the 60 goods and services, it means that the agency can support or outsource services. The reason they are high is because we are using, you know, outside people. And I'm trying to say, you know, now there's this talk of consultants, and the money is that being made from the city. Are there any plans to build this capacity internally in a way so that you don't complain about operational budget? Because if you're complaining that the EDA is high because you source the services outside, then I presume that the mitigating better should be that you are trying to create internal capacity. Then finally, said, I was trying to do the math in my head when we were trying to explain that 30,000 is in a way linked to 30,000. And the numbers that you mentioned do not add up. You said 30,000, and you said 15,000, and then you said 5,000. And the thing is, if you are looking at the next 5 years, and we say 27,000, and then this is the second year, this is not the first year of the MTNF. That's one thing that we must take into consideration. Is that this is the budget that we're looking at is for the second year. And you are saying it's 15,000. And then you say 60,000 is somewhere. And then if I add that, it's going to be 60,000. And then you say 5,000 is somewhere in between, pay approval and so forth. I think what we need to get the MCCO is the proper breakdown from 27,000 in terms of how we're going to achieve the 27,000. This plan, or what you have said, it does not take 27,000. It means next time when you come for your quarterly report, because it says it's in a pipeline. When you come for quarterly report, include in there how we are going to achieve the 27,000. Because that's what the MTNF is saying, especially when you look at your component around the 1.5 million housing opportunities. Because now you have to go back. If you can only deliver 14,000, then you have to go back. So let the numbers speak to each other. Thanks.
Sir, in line with your plea that we need to be short, I think we must give credit where it is due, noting the problems that SHA has gone through and the confidence that they are showing. I think I join the Honourable Member of Government that Kala said that indeed they are encouraging. They have almost anticipated even questions that were to happen then, and that even before, the thing that we always worry about them. Certainly, even in terms of the conservation, we must they are looking towards 5%, which is what we want to see in the nearest future. So, even in terms of your fully accredited social housing institutions, soon. So I want to believe that they will also take care of our comprehensive agenda as we go forward to ensure that the country reflects what we want to see. So from where I sit, I think it is a promise. There's light in the end of the tunnel. So we hope to keep on making us happy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. As I'm heading over to them to respond, one needs to say that light must not dim any time soon. Because sometimes once you get too much credit, you relax. And I think that is that with you being having been in IBU, you might decide just to call you any time to come and appoint and to be support to us. We're not going to be waiting for any new time. So we might just decide that in 2 months' time, come back and tell us how far you are now. So just be on the radio all the time, because we would want to see that progress as much as possible. In that part.
Thank you, Dr. Singh. We acknowledge the comments that have been made. Maybe let me just clarify in terms of the targets why we have most of them under Quarter 4. This is in line with the change of our planning. As I've indicated previously, we were planning for approvals in terms of these are the types, the delivery of the national social housing targets. But I'm sure, Chairperson, that going forward, we will need to there's an exercise that we need to do to fine tune, just to make sure that how many units can be delivered on a quarterly basis. But at this stage, we couldn't do that, so we planned for the annual target. But also take into account the delivery of the social housing units, the multi-year project. But nevertheless, we must still have some delivery on a quarterly basis. In the question which talks to the adding up or the non-adding up of the target, Chairperson, we were just being a little bit cautious, but if you add them up, we are likely to exceed the 37,000. But also the point that needs to be made is that not everything that is in the pipeline is going to be delivered as planned, because there is some work that needs to be done. And that's why the figures, they exceed the 27,000. The last question in terms of the use of the consultants, I will allow the corporate services manager to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The agency and outsourced services, if you look at the budget, which is slide number 24, is housed under institutional investment program. And that program, in terms of issuing of grants, most of the work is done by service providers. I must say, Honorable Ghana, we are working very hard to reduce consultants. We are obliged as a public entity to submit a consultant reduction plan to National Treasury, and in our reduction plan we have factored in the need to appoint people internally. For example, in the investment management unit, my COO and my colleague Mr. Kukamurde will explain further why they need to use consultants at the moment, because also tied to get a grant of 41 million, there was a PA instruction that none of that money must go towards compensation of employees. So it's a dicey situation that we are managing consultants in terms of our consultants reduction plan. And then in terms of the weighting of the lack of operational budget, we have to apologize for that type of revenue. So it's actually supposed to be lack of or insufficient operational budget. Thank you.
That takes us to the end. Of course, there might be unsatisfactory answers, which must be noted, and then as we continue the engagement with the editors, it will be clarified. And I hope the department is noting some of those as CFO, so that even if we interact with you without them, some of those clarities will be sought from your side. Thank you very much for really staying with us until this time. There is a little bit of lunch, not much, but with the austerity measures, that's what we could manage. But otherwise, the meeting is adjourned. Honorable members, we will see you after the report.
I'll remind you next time. I'll remind you. Don't worry.
Yeah.